What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. This episode of the show is brought to you by Beeline Coffee. I've got my own roasted Beeline Coffee, the Roasted Tire. It's delicious. It's a lighter roast. It's medium body. It's got a bunch of caffeine in it, but it's still drinkable all day. I drink the stuff all morning. It is delicious. Beeline Coffee uses the best beans from the most well-known sources, whether it's Ethiopia, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, all different parts of Central America and Africa. There's a Rwanda roast too. My man Cameron Weiss got his own roast as well. Check that out. Beeline is just, it's delicious stuff. And if you use code TST at checkout, I'll give you 15% off your entire order. Whether it's a big order, small order, subscription plan, doesn't matter. Beeline Coffee makes a great gift. I got my dad the Coffee of the Month plan for a year last year, and he loves it. He drinks the stuff every day as well. Use code TST at checkout at BeelineCoffee.com. Get yourself a nice helping of Beeline Coffee, the official coffee beverage of the Smoking Tire Podcast. Also, don't forget about Dylan Optics. Those amazing sunglasses I've been wearing now for almost 8 years in our videos. Dylan's don't just look different, they work different. It's like looking at HD life. The image quality through this glass is so good and so clear. Whenever people see me wearing my Dylan's, they go, "Oh, why are your glasses fogged up?" And I go, "They're not fogged up. This is how they're supposed to look. Here, try them on." And then they try them on and they go, "Wow, this is an amazing level of clarity and vividness from a pair of sunglasses." Go to thesmokingtire.com, click on the Partners tab, and there's a banner ad there for Dylan. If you click on that one, I will send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt with every purchase of Dylan Optics sunglasses, and I'm going to keep wearing these things because I love them. I can't ever imagine myself wearing a different brand of sunglasses. Dylan's are, they're made in America in Scottsdale, Arizona, and it's a great company, and I love working with them. Go to thesmokingtire.com. Click on the Partners tab and the Dylan banner. I know that's a couple of steps, but there's really not a better way to do it right now. And I'll send you a free Smoking Tire t-shirt if you order up a pair of Dylan Optics sunglasses. All right. On this episode of the show, we've got IndyCar driver Ryan Finney in studio. Ryan is a local, actually, who I met at Bill's, a.k.a. Malibu Kitchen, rolled up on one of these cool Royal Enfield motorcycles that he's actually now the distributor of. Ryan is a serious car enthusiast, motorcycle enthusiast, and a lifelong racer who comes from a motorsport family. He's an interesting guy. He's very talented and, young, energetic, fun. And we're happy to have him in studio. It's IndyCar driver Ryan Finney on this episode of the Smoking Tire Podcast. Hello, Smoking Tire Podcast. This is how we start. Boom.
Dude,
we're here.
I love it. This is
we
cool.
are fucking here. On a Monday, Ryan Finney in the house. Hello, sir.
How you doing, man? Thanks for having me. This is definitely cool.
Racing driver. I don't want to pigeonhole you into just Indy cars.
No,
GT cars, open wheel cars.
Yeah, I mean the focus for me has been, you know, open wheel, but you know, given the way that, you know, everything is in the racing world, you end up crossing, you know,
you see where you're seated.
That's exactly right, you know. You go after wherever the seats are. And you know, I've been fortunate at times, and then, you know, also been unfortunate with the way that it is. But I feel like that's kind of the story for everyone in racing for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I definitely love my sport. There's things I don't like about it, but
like what? Start there. Let's just start by shitting on your sport. No, you can get to that.
It's not. It's the. Yeah, but trust me. I mean, it's the, you know, 90% of the sport is, you know, away from the wheel kind of thing.
Yeah, of course. That's like my gig too, dude.
100%. Yeah.
Everyone's like, "Dude, your gig fucking rules." And I'm like, "What you should watch is a video of me responding to emails for 10 hours straight."
Oh, God.
That would be exciting.
Yeah. No, they, you know, it's interesting. It's definitely a very, it's time consuming away from the car.
Yeah. So, you know, like, what are some of the things you have to do away from the car? Other than, like,
I mean, the constant game is the sponsorship game.
Right.
I mean, you spend hours and hours and hours, you know, working on sponsorship, doing stuff, you know, to make sure you get in the car, and you're constantly communicating with, you know, team owners, things like that, who are, you know, a lot of the time super, you know, willing to work, but then they're like, yeah, so, you know, what kind of budget, what do we bring to the table kind of deal?
And yeah, well, 'cause that's sort of a lot of your value is like to a team owner is absolutely. What can you do for me?
Like, what can you bring to the
table? Yeah, 'cause there's a lot of fast people.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of fast, but it's like fast plus, do you have the right look? Can you bring in the right cash? That sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and unfortunately in recent years and you know, there's been a lot of guys who've been in and out of seats. Like one of my good buddies, Connor Daly's one of those.
I know
guys.
That name.
Yep. Super good dude. You know, he's, you know, struggled to stay in a ride and, you know, but he's totally deserving of it. He's quick and it's one of those things that there's a lot of people that come into the sport and, you know, all right, you know, here's a check.
Yeah.
And you know, the good guy.
Are there gentlemen drivers in IndyCar?
No, right. Definitely not. Definitely, I mean,
there's
like,
gentlemen drivers in F1.
Yeah, from like.
when I learned that shit, it fucking blew my mind.
Well, I mean, that's like the F1 classic, but I mean, once you get like to, you know, I think like the last rank of where there's like gentleman drivers essentially in open wheel stuff, like in like the real racing series stuff, is like Star Mazda, I think, had some.
Dude, no, totally fucking gentleman drivers in F1, dude. Manor Racing and all that shit, those are gentleman drivers.
Well, Manor's gone.
Well, but they were there until fucking 8 months ago. They're not like, it wasn't like they were gone in the 80s. They were gone last year.
Well, I mean,
there's some Force India fucking gentleman drivers, dude.
Well, I mean, the Force India guys are actually super young coming up this season. They're really young. I know that, you know, well, Force India just got bought out by,
who did they get bought out by?
So they got bought by a kid's dad.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Case in point.
So what are they called now? Racing Point Force India?
Is that what it is now?
That's what Zach just found. Racing. Are these the new colors? Fucking pink?
Oh, they started pink last year. So Lance Stroll bought the team.
Lance Stroll, yep. Right. Yep.
He's the money guy behind a couple major fashion labels and some other stuff.
Yeah. So, yes. So there are gentlemen drivers in F1, and it's Racing Point Force India. Is he grabbing his junk?
Yep. It's not gentlemen drivers, per se. That's, you know, there's obviously, you know, the older guys are the ones who are going to own the teams. You know, that's the way it is. But at least the drivers are still, they still range in that, you know, Max Verstappen got in there when he was like 17, I think, 18, you know, with the Red Bull program. But now he's like, you know, he's a little older. But I mean, I think the oldest guy in F1 is now Kimi, who's like 40.
Yeah, he's old. For
he's
F1.
41, I think.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that. Somebody online will probably.
Jesus, these guys have really committed to this fucking pink thing, haven't they? There's pink all over.
I think that
is
that.
It breast cancer month?
No, that was. That's no. The whole year. I think that's that their sponsor is like some brand that, and their colors are pink. But I mean, you know, it's. Hey, dude, rock it.
I mean, it's just a heavy. It's a heavy. Zach just pulled up a picture of one of the cars. It's like a heavy amount of pink.
Oh yeah,
entirely pink. Hashtag Pink Panthers is what it says.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, if you're fucking winning, great.
Hey.
If you're pink and in the back, that's shitty. That sucks. You know what I mean? But like, you know, it's like salmon pants are great if you're fucking everybody. But if you're not,
if you're winning, if you're just winning at life and everything, I get that. I still don't think, you know, I would wear salmon pants at this point.
You do in Nantucket.
Yeah, but I still don't think I would. I'd rather opt for the white. I feel like that's just,
you know. The whites are good.
Yeah.
The whites look good on everybody. You just need a matching, blazer, you need matching sunglasses and a white belt.
Yeah.
And you're golden with the white.
Yeah.
Can't drink red wine with the fucking white. Otherwise, you're really rolling the dice. That's some dangerous shit right there.
Yeah, be careful.
A bottle of cab and white pants, you're fucked.
White pants and your boat shoes and whatnot.
So how'd you start driving race cars? Your dad was a race car driver, right?
He was back in the day and he got into it later in life, and so he was kind of, you know, he went to college and actually did a bunch of stuff, was in the film industry for like a little bit, and got into restaurants when, like, his last year of college. Like, he did camera work for, like, you know, when the USC game, like the old games and the Rams, when the Rams were originally in LA, which is kind of cool.
The OG Rams.
And then he kind of, you know, he got into cars, and that kind of got him into racing, and that's, you know, that's kind of how I met a lot of people. I mean, obviously in racing was, you know, through him. But I got started in go-karts when I was 5.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you good?
Yeah. I mean,
obviously you're a professional driver now. Were you instantly good?
When you first start, no. I mean, nobody really is. But it's like there comes the, it comes like the fear factor, and like there's like the people that, you know, putt around the track, mm-hmm. and I was the complete opposite. I was like the dude who was like full throttle until it was barriers. Yeah, like just, yeah, yeah. Go. Oh shit.
where are you from originally?
So I was born here in LA. I grew up in Carmel, like literally by Laguna Seca.
Oh, that's
like
right.
5 minutes.
Yeah, because your dad, because the restaurant,
we got the other Baja Cantina.
Yeah, so Baja Cantina. If you've ever been to Monterey Car Week, Baja Cantina is a well-known spot. That's your family's spot.
We are car people.
Yeah, and there's a Thursday, right? Is the Baja Cantina show? Is it Thursday or Wednesday?
Yeah, Thursday nights during like the summer, like daylight savings time. So we just had the last one. You know, and God, you know, it's actually not half bad. I just talked to my parents earlier, and there's some ash from, you know, fires and stuff starting at like smoky air and whatnot. So people aren't going to
want to
drive.
Those fires aren't near there, though, are they?
They're not near, not like super close, but it travels. I mean, they hit San Francisco. Did you read your iPhone the other day? Like yesterday, it said straight up, yeah, San Francisco, and you look at the bottom where it says air quality.
Oh, is it
horrible?
It just
said straight up unhealthy.
It says like Beijing.
It's in Santa Cruz. It's like,
is it?
Yeah, the sky there was all kind of grayed out, and the sun was all orange looking.
It was one the beach on this weekend was crazy. I mean, the fucking fires in Malibu. I mean, you live in Venice where I live too, and the sky was red.
The whole place smelled like a campfire.
Yeah, Saturday morning was really bad.
Gnarly.
And I could see from my roof. I went up on my roof, and with binoculars, I could see Malibu. Like, I could see the flames, like, 100 feet.
Oh, it was gnarly.
It was so wild.
I put some pictures, and I'll put them back up on my Instagram story, I mean, from, like, the fires in Malibu and everything.
Because you went up in there.
I went up in there on Friday morning.
To do what?
So we were getting some cars and some animals and stuff out. I obviously have friends out there, and... I had a friend up in Point Doom and had some cars and whatnot, and we needed to help him get stuff out. So we all kind of went up there, took like trucks and trailers. I just drove some stuff out, helped out.
Could you like get to it on PCH? Like how do you?
So in Friday morning, yeah, you still could. They shut down PCH around, I think it was around probably like 10:30, 11 a.m.
Okay.
And so, I mean, we went in there and got it out, but we couldn't come back west on PCH or back south on PCH, so we went over the hill, which seemed like counterintuitive considering the fires were like in the middle, but we went like all the way up to way north.
118 and then around, right?
Basically, yeah.
So for those not from LA, which is most of you, that is like, it's like driving the wrong, it's like if you want to go from New York to LA and driving the wrong way around the world. You know what I mean? It's literally, it's that level of inconvenience. Yeah. Oh yeah, Zach's got a map for you. Pull that map up for the rest of the world, Zach. So that Point Doom is that little the one at the bottom there where the mouse is. And then on the right, the very right of the screen is Venice Beach where we live. And so rather than going PCH, which runs along that, you had to go straight north off the screen. Like, we're not even showing off the screen. Past the 101, which is on fire. Keep going, keep going, keep going. That yellow road across the top, the 118, going all the way down there
and
go
around
to the highway to get down. That's like...
And now the 118 shut down because there's another fire up in Simi. Yeah.
So how horrible was it inside the fire zone up there?
I mean, it wasn't too bad when I was there in the morning, but we knew it was going to keep getting worse, and it got consistently worse over like a 30-minute period of time.
Yeah.
You know, and I have multiple friends that live out there, and so that's been like, you know, obviously this whole weekend I've been kind of worried about it, and we wanted to go back out there and get some stuff. You know, some of my friends from, you know, Deus Ex Machina here in Venice, and my buddy runs that lives up in Latigo, and but we just got news like an hour ago.
The table because it reverbs into the.
Sorry,
no, it's the audience at home screams at their fucking radios. You know, I don't care.
No, we got news like 35-45 minutes ago that his house was all right, but a lot of other stuff wasn't. And right now, the only way they're getting out there is by boat. So people are going on boats from the marina
to Point Doom
and going out to like a couple different places, and so they're parking out and then like paddling in.
They're still?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So the PCH still shut down. It's still bad. Man. So, but
the fire didn't make it to PCH.
Oh,
did it
jumped PCH. It went across
PCH?
Into Point Doom a couple places. Yeah.
Oh, whoa. Fuck.
Oh, it's real bad.
I didn't realize it jumped PCH.
Yeah, that's why, you know, I kind of wanted to bring awareness to how bad it actually was, and you know, it's one of those things right now that nobody really knows exactly where they stand if they have when the people that have houses there. And, you know, Calabasas, I think, is still under mandatory evacuation, the whole city.
A friend of mine lives in Thousand Oaks, Dave Feinseller, Zach, and just got the fire literally stopped at his street.
Yeah.
Like, the house across the street from his burned down, and his house is
crazy.
Fine. Yeah, it was wild.
That's what it's like, because I saw, like, some of the Google images that they had up, and they're showing, like, and obviously some guys were throwing, you know, flying drones out in that area.
Yeah.
And
is that the map of the fucking fire? Jesus Christ. Yeah. Look how big that is. That is so much fire. Like, north to south, that's like an easy 20 miles.
So the yellow is the Hill Fire perimeter. That's Simi Valley's. And then all of this is the Woolsey Fire, which is the Malibu, you know, the one that's in Malibu, which is
that
a huge
fire. I saw that fire come over the top of the hill and go down like the top half of the hill in like 30 minutes at 11 p.m. on Friday.
Did you see those pictures I put up on Instagram, the videos? I was up at the top in the Marino, the Latitude building, my friend's place there. And we were on the roof looking out, and I just was like, you know, we sat there 5 minutes and just saw one giant one come
over the
hill. The
one huge one came over the hill and down.
Unreal.
I was like, holy shit, it was going so fast.
And I'm just now starting to hear of, like, the real devastation from, like, people that are out there. And
Oh, yeah.
Seen a couple burned down cars. Saw an FJ that didn't make it. It's a little heartbroken on that one.
I've only seen pictures, but it's a fucking mess up
there. It's a mess. And, you know, luckily, like, most people got animals out.
Poor giraffe.
Yeah.
Stanley the giraffe.
They, you know, he's all right. They updated on him today. But, you know, this guy out there, his Instagram is at LA Speed. He's been posting, his name's Ari. He's been posting some of the, like, probably the best videos because he lives out there. And first off, he's a badass.
LA Speed?
Yeah.
Can you pull up that Instagram, Zach?
Yeah.
Instagram,
you look at his
LA Speed?
And his stories and everything have just been, like, mind blowing. What he's been putting up. And first off, he's a badass anyway because he's out there rocking a Unimog.
Oh, this guy's ruling a Unimog?
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Here we go. Here's a bunch of videos of shit smoldering and
smoking. Yeah, go down
smoking.
A little bit. Go down in the thing. Look at, check out the yellow Unimog. How rad is that?
Wow.
But he's like, yeah, look at that.
That's a fucking fire, dude.
Yeah. And he's, you know, he's another car guy.
What road is this off of?
I think it's Cavalieri Road. That's where he's at. But,
God, that's
I mean, he's
so...
a car guy. You look at the guys getting the cars out in the background and...
That is a crazy fire.
Yeah. No, it's definitely taking its toll out there. And so, you know, I know I talked with you about kind of the event that I'm doing this weekend. And obviously I had planned it prior to any sort of fire thing like that. And, you know, we had a discussion last night. Should we cancel it or post?
Is the vintage motorcycle thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so we thought about, you know, should we potentially cancel it or postpone it at least for the time being? And, you know, we decided, you know, considering one of the biggest things that everybody seems to need out there, the fire department, who I've been in contact with, and they, you know, they don't want any more food. They don't want, like, at all.
Apparently people were just, like, leaving food at fire stations.
God.
I saw a tweet that was like, stop leaving food. We got enough food. What do they need?
So they need some, you know, they want cash donations because they need to get equipment out there. They need they're trying to do, you know, rehabilitation stuff, trying to get more, I guess, not troops, but whatever you call the you know, more firefighters, I guess, but like literally troops of these Cal Fire guys. But I mean, they're asking for cash donations. And so, you know, right now you can, if you're in throughout the week, you can drop off cash donations at Dais on the corner of Lincoln and Venice there. And then this weekend I am, you know, we're going to do the event and I'm going to put up a couple cool items and we'll do like a raffle and, you know, have everyone, you know, buy raffle tickets and donate the money and what if they want to make donations. Just trying to help out as much as humanly
possible. It's at Baja?
It is at Baja in Venice.
Cantina Venice. What time?
So from 8:30 to 11 in the morning.
Cool. That's good. So, I might actually be able to go because we're both going to Phoenix, right?
We're both going to Phoenix
tonight.
Yeah,
I might be able to go.
Yeah.
I think my flight's at like 12. I'm going out to our friend Eli Kogan. Is starting this thing called Auto Car Club, which is a car... Jesus, that fucking fire. Is starting this thing called Auto Car Club in Scottsdale, which is a big storage facility, and I'm going to congratulate him, go to a party, and do a little recon for my own place.
Yeah.
Selfishly.
I mean, it's car storage, but it's like Soho House for cars. It is unbelievable.
Yeah, he's doing more of the event space type of thing, and I don't know if he has a website yet, Zach, but he has an Instagram, Auto Car Club on Instagram. It's got an event space. Mine is not. Mine is just is more.
You're strictly storage. Yeah.
I just don't have the space. He's in fucking Arizona. You can. Oh, dude. I think his unlimited. Shit is like 47,000. No, not auto. It's OTTO. Sorry. It's
yeah,
it's
he's
way
up by
bigger.
The airport, I think.
Yeah, not there. Not Phoenix Airport.
No, like, the Scottsdale Airport.
Yeah, look how fucking huge this place is. It's giant. I think it's 47,000 square feet.
And it
feet,
already
seriously.
Looks like an art gallery, and it's not even done yet.
Yeah, well, he's a little fucking hoity-toity, you know, so he can make it. He can do all the styling and shit.
He's got the styling on
yeah.
the down.
Yeah, he wears really tight pants.
He likes know? Bikes, too.
He understands. Yeah, it looks like it's going to be cool. He's not competition for me. He's fucking 400 miles away. I'm not worried about him.
No, it's a that's a different deal.
Yeah, it's in a different state. I'm okay.
Yeah, no, you're good. You're good on that.
I actually do. I'm interested to see what he does. His materials and stuff. I want to check out. Yeah.
Yeah, desert building's a little different than here.
Yeah.
So,
but these fucking fires really threw a monkey wrench into everything.
They threw
weekend.
A monkey wrench into everything for a lot of people, and it's going to be for a long time.
Like, the canyons are fucked.
Oh, my God.
Ain't nobody
bad.
Just going fun
and
driving
that's
up there
the thing,
for a
dude,
minute.
There's going to be no fun driving for a while. And I think that they're, because of this, they're going to limit the two, like up to Newcomb's Ranch, the... What's that road called?
Angeles
up there?
Crest?
Yeah, Angeles Crest.
Why?
Because of the fire stuff right now. Until they're going to go back in there.
There's fires up there?
No, not yet. No, not yet. But I know that they're starting to, like, all the kind of forest roads. They're now with everything that's gone on in Malibu and Simi Valley. And they're limiting access to a lot of it. Just,
really?
Yes.
Yeah, I got to go film tomorrow.
I know for the campground stuff, just because I think there's no campfires like at all in California right now. Like,
no,
you can't,
but they
yeah.
didn't allow campfires up there before, did they?
I don't know. I think year to year, it's usually like designated spots. When I went up to Bear Mountain, it was like you can only have them in fire ring areas.
Yeah, yeah.
And then sometimes they even shut that down.
Well, I hope they don't. No. They won't shut down the road just for driving.
I don't think they're going to shut it down. I just think that it's going to be limited.
That would,
and
that would be very annoying.
Yeah.
I need those.
But
roads.
Dude, we need the Malibu roads.
Yeah.
I'm bummed out about that. I mean, that's where I ride. It's where I drive and
have
a lot of fun.
Mulholland's completely fucked, right?
Dude, I don't know. I have an update. I know that a couple of the bridges, like the bridge by the old house in the canyon, that's gone.
Just gone.
Just straight up gone.
It melted, right?
It because it was like wood and metal frame.
Yeah,
so obviously
yeah.
the wood burned, then it like collapsed on itself.
Yeah.
And apparently, I think that there's some damage to PCH is what, some of the police that... Mm. So a couple of the police that, have been patrons. I've known them for a long time of the restaurants. And so they come in, they've kind of updated, staff. And so I heard from managers, things like that, of what was going on. And,
yeah.
I don't pop into the restaurants all that much, but every once in a while, it's kind of fun to get whatever the gossip is.
Yeah. I feel my friend Bill owns Malibu Kitchen and Gourmet.
Oh,
like,
dude.
The rents are up there, are crazy up there
insane.
Anyway. And like, man, if not that it's anyone's fault if it's a big fucking fire, but if it chokes out his business, that would be very tough. If you can get up there, if you live in LA and you can get up there, maybe not today, but soon, if you've got people who have businesses in Malibu, try and patronize them.
I mean,
go spend money up there if you can.
The second that we can get up there, I think that's going to be
I
want
to go to Bill's
thing.
Like tomorrow if I can, but I don't know if
I can. That's the weekend spot.
Yeah, I don't know
that's
if I can get
at.
Up there. Do you know where they closed it?
So when I went up the other day on Friday, they had closed it basically at sunset in PCH.
Oh, fuck, really?
So you couldn't get past there. They wouldn't even let people pass there who had like, that was Friday when it was like raging
out of
control.
Yeah.
But they were like, you couldn't pass even with your name on your ID and you lived right there.
Yeah.
So.
What a disaster.
It's a disaster.
And the one up north looks even worse by like a lot, right? Like it's real. The one
it's
up north
real
is, even is really, really bad.
Yeah.
It's so bad Guy Fieri's out there cooking. Like, that's how you know it's bad. When Guy Fieri starts to fucking grill and is cooking for people, that's how you know it's bad. Carl flew in for that.
Yeah, Fieri really does that. He's doing lots and lots and lots and lots of food.
No,
legit,
Carl flew in to help Guy Fieri cook for displaced people.
That's super cool.
Yeah, I actually kind of wish I would. Next time there's a horrible disaster, I'm going to go up there and cook with Guy Fieri, I think. Because I could. Carl's got the inn. I won't go cook with Guy Fieri.
That's funny.
There we go. There's them cooking for. Is that a huge fire in the background there?
Yeah.
Yep. There you go.
Or a sunset with smoke behind
it. It's either a beautiful sunset or the whole fucking world is on fire.
Jeez.
One of the two. No. Yeah, but global warming doesn't exist. Climate change isn't real. It's a hoax. what? let's anyway.
Did you ever go to kart school? Did you do that?
No, I never did. I never did karting school. So my driver coach growing up is is now a factory Ford driver. His name's Joey Hand.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, I know Joey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He was your coach when you were a kid?
He was so
good coach.
Not bad, right? So he had just moved out of karting and he got a ride in Atlantic. So him and I basically filled his place when he moved on, and he was like the factory Emick driver, which was like the Northern California karting factory. I filled his place on that team. And then, that's just kind of how it progressed. And he helped me pretty much every step of the way. He'd come back, in between races, he wasn't running Atlantics, all the kart stuff that I did. And then I finished out kind of my karting career with Mike Speed, who was Scott Speed's dad.
Oh, how about that? I was about to ask if he was related. Yeah. It's good racing name.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
Yeah.
That was my last couple of years of karting. That's kind of, that was it.
When did you move to cars?
I was like 15.
Okay.
So I started getting like opportunities to test in some cars when I was like 13 and a half, 14. Spent some time at Button Willow, and back then it was
that's pretty gangster. When you're doing like racing and shit, like before you have a driver's license, that's boss move. I like that move. Right?
Actually, that was like the most common question. Like, how can you drive? That's got to be illegal. How can you drive a car?
It's not on the fucking road.
I'm like, it's not on the road. Yeah. Exactly. But everyone's thinking is like, if you're driving a car, you have to have a driver's license.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Listen, I know some fucking dudes that are in their 30s that don't have fucking licenses. That don't have to
They're driving on
the
street.
And they're on the street. Yeah. Yeah.
There's no DUI checkpoint at the racetrack.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although there should be. At a Lemons race, maybe there should be.
I've been asked to do that 25 hours of Thunder Hill which is to me almost like a Lemons race with
because there's like 150 cars on the grid. Yeah,
yeah. But there's like people who run like LMP cars mm-hmm. to like a BMW like 318.
Totally.
Like, wait, what?
I race in AER, which is like a fun series. Yeah. It's not, but there are some very real drivers that do it. Fun. And there's literally like cars that are a half a step above a Lemons car. You know, like a beat ass E30. And then there's World Challenge Corvettes and Caymans, and someone brought a 458 Challenge. I race a fucking Miata, and there's a 458 Challenge. Look at this picture of this grid. Yeah, there's is he spec E46? And is that a factory? There's a Cobra.
And a Daytona prototype.
Is that a Daytona prototype, or is that a super light SLC?
It looks like a DP.
Whatever it is, it looks like a DP car, which means it's fucking fast. And then if you go up back here, there's an E30 and a Miata with a giant flat rubber apron for, aero.
I actually feel like that's fairly smart. If it's probably plastic, but
it is smart, but I'm just like, it's a Miata with an improvised, aerodynamics. And then we have
on that DP, what do you think is improvised?
It looks like a DP. I don't think it is now.
No, does that say Ford on the front of it? That's a Ford oval, right?
It's an oval, but it's red, so I don't know what it is.
The Lola oval isn't red, I don't think.
I don't know. I think that's a DP car.
I mean, but look at this Camaro. Like, this has fake headlights because it's just like a stock car body.
Yeah,
I mean,
that looks like
some serious
stuff.
That
looks like a Pratt & Miller built car.
Yeah, it probably is. Yeah, it probably is.
Yeah, a tube frame car, which is
fucking rad.
That's like what I ran in Grand Am years ago.
It's a cool field.
Yeah, Grand Am was cool.
Grand Am was awesome. I had a great time in that series.
What did you drive?
So I ran a couple different cars in that. I ran the GTO-R.
That's a Pratt & Miller car, right?
Big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that thing, it was so fast because they did an extra 2 years with that car, like a continuation run with it.
Yeah,
which
like
is when
after
I came
they
in,
stopped making it, right?
After they stopped making it because it had such a big fan base. And then the guys that came in, brought the next car, which was the GXPR, which was
the G6 GXPR.
Ugliest.
Right? The car not remotely based on any production car.
Oh, none of them were.
Well, but yours was the GTO was like a real model of a car. Like the GXPR was a front wheel drive car. They turned into a rear wheel drive, like race car.
But I mean, and the only thing that was accurate to size was the body on it, and only to a degree, like lengthwise. So the regulations back then, I think, were that your wheelbase had to be within an inch of what the thing was. But you know, the GXP, when they made that car, it was such a big car that they were struggling trying to get the wheelbase down on the GTOR or on the GXPR, the race car.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing that they had, one of the biggest issues, is that it was such a long car.
Oh, was it a G8? It was a G8 GXP, not a G6 GXP.
Yes,
Sorry.
But it was a two door. It was the two door coupe thingy that they had. Was that a G6?
That's a six. Yeah, that's a six.
But it was still massive. It was huge. But compared to the GTO, it was just such a better handling car. And everywhere we went, we were quicker, significantly quicker. Until Grand Am, and it actually screwed us all up because Grand Am threw a wrench in, you know, a real wrench in our program. They're like, yeah, 51% of the weight has to be in the front.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Oh, I didn't know
that. We destroyed tires. It was just like, it was, because if Porsche's not winning in sports cars, there is an issue across the board.
Oh, is there a Porsche bias?
If Porsche isn't winning, there's an issue.
That's funny.
That's what I learned back then. But I mean, I had the opportunity to drive a Porsche at Laguna Seca, at my home track, which
lovely
was cool.
car.
It was a cool car,
a race car.
Yeah. So same team, Matt. They when they kind of transitioned out of the GTO car, they had a Porsche, you know, GT3 Cup car.
Mm. Those things are fucking great. They're really nice.
They are. You know, it's interesting how much of the Porsche like driving aesthetic translates from the street car to the race car.
Yeah.
And it's the handling of it is so similar. You know, it's Porsches are always known to be like a little ass happy, even though they have like massive tires on the back.
Yeah.
And it still is the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I remember talking to Pat Long a while ago about the RSR that they made, which they moved the motor
now it's a mid-engine. Yeah.
And I guess that's a completely different ballpark.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we got to get Pat back on the show.
100%.
Didn't they have like a little bit of a rough year just because, the 4 GTs are so low and slippery, and the Gallardos too, and the Porsche is just like
Huracans.
Huracan. When I was at the race, like I just saw how tall the comparison of roof height was like noticeable.
I think what is the roof height on the Ford is like what 37 inches, 38 right in there.
I think it's really low. It might be under 40.
Yeah.
I think it's under 40.
It's definitely under 39,
yeah.
It's crazy.
It's ridiculously low.
Yeah.
Their top speeds are like so fucking high.
But God, they sound horrible. The race car does.
The road car sounds better.
The road car does sound better.
Yeah.
The race car sounds like some kind of like semi-muffled like washing machine without the rubber.
Completely agree. It's a terrible sounding vehicle. And the guys who ran the team were making all kinds of, well, it's the anti-lag and it's this and it's that. And it's like, well, it still sounds like dog shit.
Turbo V6. Like none of them sound good.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know.
Is there a single turbo V6 that sounds good? Has anyone done one yet?
Like a Group B car from the 80s, but that's not, that's cheating.
Like Dino? Yeah. Dino V6? No. Not really.
I think it's just the architecture is not going to sound great.
V6s just don't sound good typically. It's not a good sounding.
They can be loud or quiet. That's it. I think they can't, I don't think they can be good or bad.
F-Type sounds okay, but that's not turbo. That's a supercharged. That's a supercharged. Yeah. That one sounds okay.
The V8 one is unreal.
The V8 one is war god of thunder.
I think of F-Type, and I'm just like, I remember I was doing Playboy Garage a couple years ago, and you know, we had a just obviously all the lineup of cars, and that F-Type was probably my favorite car of all the ones that we had there that day, and we had a Turbo S. And
911 turbos?
Yeah.
They're pretty vacuum cleanery. That's pretty muted.
That was the thing. It was so muted for what it was. And then I got in the Jaguar and I was like, oh my God. And you just give it a little bit of gas here and there, and sure enough, it's ass ends over here and tires over there.
Those early ones, the rear drive V8 ones, before they made all of them all wheel drive.
Are they all wheel drive now?
All the V8s are all wheel drive now.
Oh, see, I want a rear wheel drive.
Well, that's the long play, long hold. In 10 years, the rear wheel drive ones will be worth more than the all drive. But my favorite is the V6S manual coupe, which is actually very lovely and balanced.
Anything with a manual is just kind of,
yeah, and it's a Getrag BMW box, so it's the same shifter feel as like an M3, which is lovely. It's very nice.
Yeah.
They made like six of them. Nobody buys them. They're you can't get them on a lot. You got to special order them. But I went on the press launch. They're great.
Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Like, you know, to talk about, because the manual versus automatic or Tiptronic and mm-hmm. you know whatever it is nowadays. And you know, I had, you know, my last E92 BMW was, you know, it had the DCT and mm-hmm. and I realized, like, you know, when I'm here, it's, I obviously don't have the normal day job kind of thing, so I'm just not doing all the commuting and stuff. So I was just like, you know, I'm just gonna go back to driving stick every day everywhere I go, and I've just been so much happier ever since.
If you don't have to slog it out in traffic for 40 minutes
each day. That's why I got the motorcycles now.
Oh yeah. Should we talk about that?
Yeah, we definitely talk about that.
You rode one down here.
I rode the one I have here is the same one you saw the other day. It's the 2019 650 twin. It's the GT bike.
So we talked about this on Sunday in Malibu before it fucking burned down. Two Sundays ago, I guess it was. So I didn't realize, I've seen Royal Enfields around, you know.
Yeah.
I've never given them much thought. I've sort of put them in a similar category as a Triumph or a BSA or something like that.
They totally were to some degree. Yeah. And so obviously all the ones that were here, which have, it, like, they haven't made a big impact in the U.S. And I think that now with these new model bikes that are going to finally be here on our shores by, you know, hopefully end of March, early April of next year, is where we're getting the dates on it right now. This is the biggest bike they make. It's a 650cc twin. All the other bikes that they make are singles, and they're 350cc, the Himalayans, the 400, which is kind of weird, and then the 500s are the singles, which are awesome bikes, but it's, you know, they got that kind of that thumper feel.
Yeah.
But they're also built, you know, the whole bike is built in India, and a lot of people don't realize that.
I didn't know that until you mentioned
it. It's been an English brand.
When did that start?
Oh, dude, I couldn't even tell you. I think like late 80s.
Like a long fucking time ago.
It's been a while,
Oh, okay, yeah. See, I didn't know.
And they manufacture 800,000 bikes a year.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, they're not a small company. And so, you know, that right there is the Interceptor. And then the one, if you see the white tank with the stripe on it, is the GT. It's on there somewhere. That was it just a second ago, but...
They got an auto scroll happening.
Yeah, there it is. That white tank right there. And you know what? I keep asking people, like I asked you the other day, what do you think that bike costs? And I've gotten basically a range from like 12 to 20 grand.
Yeah. I think my guess was like 12 to 15. Yeah.
That's what you said. And most people are like, because they're so used to the Ducati thing. And the bike looks like an expensive bike.
Yeah.
It really does. And
it looks to me like a Triumph or something. Six is cheap. Like cheap. Six is that's cheap. Like cheaper than a Ninja or something.
And the one I have now, I have absolutely put through its paces. Like, I've had this one in my possession for about a month, and I've put almost 2,000 miles on it.
Mm.
And not easy miles, like hard
city,
miles.
City miles? Or
city miles, riding through Malibu miles, like aggressive riding. I went up to Newcombs with it a couple weeks ago.
That's it, right?
That's it. There she is. Yeah.
It's a good-looking bike.
It's a great looking
bike. It's a good-looking bike. Who makes the engine? They make their own engines?
Everything. Every component on that thing is Royal Enfield, which is kind of like, it's crazy to think about.
Yeah.
But they spent a couple of years developing this motor, this whole package, and
how much power does that thing make? If you had to guess.
I think it's around 50 horsepower, I believe, which is plenty. But I mean, like, you know, it scoots me up to 100 pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Spike Ferriston stole it the weekend before out in Malibu, when I was out there with it again, and he's like, yeah, just drop it off at my house. I'm like, well, when I can drop it
that's
off,
a very Spike thing.
I
to
will
say. Just drop it off. Oh, here we go. What's that? Is this the Indian brochure?
I think so.
Yeah, that's.
Well, the prices are inner. Yeah, is that rupees?
Yeah, that's Indian rupees. That's definitely some rupees.
Yeah, it's 3.25 million rupees. good thing we know that price for our Indian audience.
But no, it's a good bike. It's a quality bike. I mean, a lot of the engineering still.
Oh shit! That exchange rate. it's 1.4 cents to a rupee.
Oh my god!
It's not a good exchange rate right now. But the point is that you're actually going to be distributing these things.
Yeah. So I mean, my relationship with them is very new, and it is going to be really starting next year, and I'm excited about it because this is something that is the barrier to entry is very low. And I think that, you know, I mean, you've been in LA, you know, for probably as long, if not longer than me. And
10 years for me.
Eight.
Yeah.
For me. So it's like you see, I've seen the number of motorcycles steadily increase every year and more so in the past 6 months, maybe because I'm paying more attention, but.
No, I think the return of cafe racer style
totally
has been visible.
Yes,
in no small part to things like Deus. I mean, they it's what's funny about Deus is like they try really hard to pretend like they're not a global like company, like they like that Deus in Venice. There's no acknowledgement of the fact that there's Deuses all over the world.
Well, see, here's the thing: is that the Deuses all over the world don't really acknowledge the Venice store, which is so strange to me. No, they act like a global brand outside of here.
Oh, really?
Which is so weird. So,
maybe because in LA and in Venice, and it's more important to be quote authentic than it is
or
local than it is other places in the world. But I mean, there's definitely like. The cafe racer thing works with the hipster look.
It
so
does.
Well,
it does.
And also, you know, Triumphs are expensive.
Triumphs are the new Triumphs are like, I think, start at $12,000.
Yeah, they're expensive
for the Bonnevilles, and so they're expensive. Yeah. And that's you know that's a lot of people don't get a bike as their only form of transportation. It's usually a second form. So to have something where the barrier to entry is lower, it's a $6,000 bike, and like. You know, they get to go have some fun riding it, and it's, for the most part, as far as I've seen with this one, pretty bulletproof.
That's good.
Which is awesome.
The plus, in L.A., dude, the traffic is so fucked here, plus you're allowed to lane split, so there's a tangible advantage to having a motorcycle.
Yeah, 100%.
I will never drive to Beverly Hills from Venice. I take my scooter. I ride a 125, dude. I have a Yamaha 125.
Dude, I gotta get you on one of mine.
I'd love to try one. Yeah,
I'm definitely gonna get you on this
thing. When I first came
to
LA, I was on a SV650 Suzuki like a year and a half, and it was great. I loved it, and it made my mom saw it. She cried and begged me to sell it.
Oh,
it looked,
I know.
It looked like kind of like a sport bike, and she doesn't know the fucking difference.
Yeah,
and so she thought, you know, I'm like I have a death wish or whatever. The scooter does not intimidate my mom. My mom comes over and sees the scooter. She's like, "What's that?" And but my scooter is the shit. I love my fucking scooter.
A lot of people dig him.
It doesn't even try to be cool.
Yeah.
It's the least pretentious thing you could drive. It cost me $0. I don't give a fuck about it. It's great. But if I want to go to Beverly Hills, it takes me 20 minutes to get there. It doesn't matter the traffic. I park right up front and I don't want to think about
it.
Dude,
the parking is so clutch. That's the thing.
Because aren't there places that you won't go in a car because you the parking situation is so fucked, I'm not even going to go.
100%.
There's restaurants I won't go to anymore because the parking is so fucked. It sounds horrible, but it's true.
Yeah.
That's what it's like to live in this crowded city.
It is. And you know, admittedly, though, like as kind of 2019 nears, you know, come like early January, I'm probably going to start, you know, garaging the bikes a little more just to reduce the risk and you know, I've got a lot of people that are counting on me next year.
Oh, you mean because of racing?
Yeah.
Because of that.
And
do they not like you riding motorcycles?
Oh, hell no.
Do you tell them?
I mean, it's kind of obvious at this point. I mean, it's every, you know, every contract I've ever looked at and everything that they've ever put in front of me has always been like, you know, if you do and you get hurt, you know, and that's the reason you get hurt. Like,
we're not paying you.
We're not paying you. You're not doing any of that stuff. And so,
you're not hiding it, obviously, because it's on your Instagram.
No, I know that.
I know.
And it is. And it's passion for me. I mean, it's become a passion. So the bike thing, obviously, I love cars. But again, the barrier of entry of cars and even the customizing of cars is fucking expensive.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like with the M6 that I'm doing, it's
oh, yeah, I forgot that thing's rad.
Oh, it's rad. And that is, you know, that's a whole different ballpark. That's. Even though I'm doing a lot of the work myself on it, it's still fucking expensive.
Tell the people what you're doing.
So, I got a really, really cool. I got a deal on a roller 1986 M6 a couple months ago, and basically it was just ready to go. No motor,
minus,
no transmission,
minus drivetrain,
minus drivetrain. As you saw from them, and you know, I just sat there and like my dad was like, "Yeah, that's kind of cool." I mean, you know, I remember those things and. Steve Dinan put up a picture of one like a while ago, and ever since then it just kind of like stuck in my mind, like that cool, sleek, like ultimate 80s
look. Oh, they're so pretty.
Look.
Yeah, they're so pretty.
And then I came
across
one.
But everyone who's owned one has said they're just a monstrous pain in the dick.
Well, that's why, like, I feel like one that didn't have a drivetrain in would be like the fucking way to go.
Yeah.
So I found some, you know, some evidence online that it had been done before, and I was looking at the inline six from the E46 M3 for a while, and tons of people have done that with this, like the 635s from that same era. And then I was calling my guy up in Camarillo, and he's like, "Hey, you know, I've got a ton of those motors. I've got an S62, and I'm like, "What's that?" And he's like, "Oh, that's the motor from like the 99 2000." He's like, "Actually, the one I have here is from 2000 from an M5 and I'm like, "Rad." Like,
so
V8's how does that work? And he's literally like, "Well, you know, you just get the little standalone ECU because this is still prior to where the major electronics came into play, and the standalone ECU is something that's doable back then, at least with that motor." Mm-hmm. And I admittedly was clueless. Like, this is not the mechanics of, like, at least the electronics. The mechanics I understand. The electronics are, that's like,
yeah,
I want nothing to do with it. And so he said, "Yeah, it's totally doable. People have done it, and if you wanna go about it, we can do it." I'm like, "All right." And then I went back, got the car, and was like, "Yeah, let's do this."
It's awesome.
So
V8 swap.
V8 swap.
Stock motor, right? You're not going to fuck with the motor.
No,
right?
Hell no. It's still a 400 horsepower motor.
It's double the power of what it had. Yeah.
I'm worried about after the first drive, about like I'm going to get it in drive and be like, "All right, now I need to upgrade the brakes."
Is the diff stock? The original diff?
Yeah.
Ooh. I mean, as long as you're not dumping the fucking clutch a million times,
I'm not trying to do crazy burnouts and whatnot. And
that's what GTO Engineering. I bought this Countach, and they were like, "Listen, I know how you drive. You can't be doing burnouts and shit in this because you'll blow up the diff." And I go, "Do you think I'm gonna be doing burnouts in a Countach? Like, really?" He's like, "Hey, man, you never know."
You know,
like,
well, everything about that car screams, "Do stupid shit in me." Yeah.
Now, you know, you can't skip this wedding ring across the ocean because it'll sink after it falls.
That's gonna be fucking rad. Is the motor in it yet? What's the status of that?
So the motor, well, the transmissions and the motor is. Like the final fitment is going in. So, telling you, it goes in without having to move the firewall.
That's
good.
But
we did have to like move like the radiator forward a little bit, and some other components did get moved around. But, it's coming along. I'm hoping in the next couple weeks.
Nice.
To be able to drive it, which would be sweet. So I've got that project, and then I've got one other motorcycle project, and I think I was telling you about that one.
You did tell me about that one.
Yeah.
You want to talk about that?
Yeah, I can talk about it a little bit, but again, you know, one of my biggest things is I look at a lot of the custom markets, and like the costs on these things are astronomical. A lot of these guys do such cool like motorcycles. You got like the guys from Confederate. I know you're not a fan of those.
I mean, just because of the racism, but the rest of the bike itself seems all right.
And then you've got like the guys, you know, Keanu Reeves has the Arch motorcycles.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Those look cool. I see him riding around Venice. Doesn't he live around? He lives in Venice, right?
I don't know.
I've seen his
He
Keanu
definitely cruises around.
Thing. Yeah.
But he, you know, like, and he does an incredible job, but those guys are re-engineering every single part on that bike, like every single aspect of that motorcycle down to the nut and bolt. Same with the Confederate. It's they do everything. And
that's why they're $80,000.
And that's exactly why. And yet there's this market for bikes that are drastically less than that. But also, again, back to the cafe racer kind of thing. So I'm doing a custom line of bikes based off of the Buell.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah. So the Buells are really cool because that top gas tank isn't actually a gas tank. And Eric Buell's a genius. Like he engineered his motorcycles really well. But the fuel is in the frame, which is super cool. That top area is actually an airbox.
Okay.
So you basically just delete that whole little hump looking gas tank thing and just stick a filter on there. But I'm doing everything kind of, you know, very unique, and I'm using a lot of components that are already on the market. And there, yeah, you do have to do some custom fab, like custom pipes. You got to do some custom stuff. But the idea is to do at this juncture about 10 bikes, and about 10 in that, like a cafe, like a really cool cafe setup. And then five in like the cafe setup, another five in like a kind of a, I don't know, kind of like a doomsday scrambler looking
yeah,
thing.
Like, yeah, like supermoto-ish or.
Yeah, but like the knobby tires.
Okay,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And one of the cool components on it is that obviously, you know, through racing, you meet a lot of people, a lot of race teams, a lot of manufacturers, and I know all the carbon guys really well, and there are a lot of used race carbon parts.
Yeah.
And so every one of my bikes is going to have carbon components on it that are been repurposed from an IndyCar, which is really cool.
Like actually taken off a used race car.
Yes.
And, that's rad.
Cut or measured or changed to work for a bike.
Exactly. So, because, I mean, the components on it are not, like, it's not a whole lot of components in terms of, like, the carbon fiber stuff. But we're looking at, like, some cool number panels, some where you're filling in, like, gaps in, you know, mm-hmm. where the subframes are. Just something that's, like, unique.
Mm-hmm. It's stuff that pretty much starts with, like, flat carbon panels. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And my goal is to keep the price on these things around 20.
I like that. What, what is that called?
So
is that a standard Buell, or is that custom?
No, so that is
DD motorcycles.
That is that's an older model Buell. So if you look at the XB, so the frame of like the XB12R, actually you can see some custom ones there. There's another manufacturer that built 47, mm-hmm. called Ronin. So
I've heard of that.
So that's the base of my bikes right there. And so the Ronin guys.
Zoom out, Zach. There you go.
There you go. The Ronin guys built, you know, 47 of these really cool custom bikes, but they're 50 grand. So that's the thing. That's a really cool, like, it's a wheel mounted, outer wheel mounted front brake. And that's, and I'm keeping that. It's actually, you know, Eric did a lot of things that were kind of out of the ball, like, you know, out of the norm.
Yeah.
And, but it worked really well. And the bikes ride great. So yeah, you won't see any plastic on my bikes whatsoever. Cool. And the exhaust configuration for mine, which we just completed the test on, looks nothing like that at all. And
is it more like Triumph Thruxton?
No, at all.
Is it like 8 inches long, like those annoying sport bike exhausts?
No, it's I built a rear exit.
Cool.
Exhaust system.
Like under the tail?
Under the tail.
Yeah, neat.
Which is very, very cool. And so we use titanium pipes on that.
I like that. Ooh. It keeps the bike narrow. I like when you don't have the pipes at the side.
Well, you realize that that's a Harley-Davidson motor.
Yeah.
And so a Harley-Davidson motor with titanium pipes.
That sounds probably pretty cool.
It is very cool.
That sounds neat.
So it's instead of having that, that's blah, 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 like it all of a sudden has this like kind of, it sounds, I compare it to like an S63.
Oh, interesting.
That Mercedes, that low AMG rumble.
It's like those Italian cars from the 60s that used Ford and Chevy engines, but had their exhausts built by Italians and ran different cams, so they sounded a little, like, you ever drive an old Pantera?
Yeah.
Old Pantera, stock old Pantera.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds very different from like a Mustang,
I've been deaf,
you know,
after getting out of one of those.
Yeah, they sound very different.
Drive.
Yeah. If you could, yeah. Zach Googles old Pantera.
Old Pantera.
Pantera? Holy shit.
Of course it is.
I guess they've been around long enough.
That's a
they
great
had a hair
Halloween
metal phase,
costume.
Didn't they?
Oh, that's fantastic.
Jesus. That's really funny.
Yeah, no, the old Panteras. I actually, one of the ones that I drove was a celebrity owned one that I was actually helping move at one point, and I won't get too into detail, but his had been modified, and I drove it down the street on Sunset for like 5 minutes, and I got out, and, you know, the valet dude was like, oh yeah, park it over here. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What?
What do they? What is the craziest thing about driving an Indy car? Because that's probably, I mean, you know, you've driven a lot of race cars, but an Indy car is probably the most extreme vehicle that you've driven, right?
Yeah, it's in terms of the physicality of it, the first place I ever drove one was, you know, my first open test was in Sebring.
That's a rough place.
It's a rough place, but that's the test track where they do it. And physically, that's not the most demanding track in the world. But it's, you know, when you're learning the car there, like, it's a little sketchy.
Yeah.
And that was the you know, the previous generation body style. It's the same car, the DW12. And then the second test that I had done, like, you know, like, of like the getting into the IndyCar situation was Sonoma, which was, so like the first test day was Sebring one thing, and then,
whoa,
Sonoma was the next one.
Yeah.
And Sonoma is like all the guys that, you know, that you'll talk to, you get out of a day of driving there and you're gassed.
Because, like, the up, down, left, right G forces, or
that,
because
that
of the
turn, that turn, like that uphill, the turn one situation, uh-huh, there is so gnarly, because it's you basically go from your fifth gear flat out up the hill,
mm-hmm,
and then just bam, 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 down real quick.
Gear.
But it's full load, So you're going up a banked corner like this.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's full load. It's like the video, the onboard video that I sent.
Oh, we have video. Yeah. Where is it? Is that from Sonoma?
That's actually from Sonoma. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Let's take a look at that.
And that's one of the places that's just, you know, physically is one of the probably the most demanding places, I think, on the schedule. Now, it's not on the schedule next year. They did replace it. It's home.
Why is there no Sonoma next year?
They went to Laguna Seca.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's pretty fun. I guess they got a loud day. Let's see. Do we have audio? Oh, yeah. Here we go. Yeah. Fuck me. So this is a current IndyCar?
This is the IndyCar with the pre. So there was the year of the Chevy and Honda body kits, and so this is the Chevy body kit, and so they switched back to the Universal last year.
Jesus,
and then
the fucking speeds here are crazy.
This looks faster than the Civic we drove in Lemons.
Wow, you really ride the inside line here through turn five.
Well, you can. It's So I think I botched this corner a little bit here. It came in a little hot.
But you can't take any curbings here, right? Because the curbings are really tall for an Indy car, aren't they? You kind of got to stay off the curbs here.
It's a little slick.
A little slippery.
Wow. Yeah. You're shifting. Was it fifth now while going through the S's?
That's flat through the S's there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's fucking gnarly.
Safety chicane.
This looks fun. I mean, that's... It looks fun when you're by yourself and probably sketchy as hell in a field of 30.
Yeah, no, I had a light start there, 2014.
Uh-huh.
That so in qualifying, practice was good, practice went good, and we were quick. And in qualifying, we had one of the battery terminals, but behind and basically inaccessible during qualifying. We had to tear the car apart after that. So I basically started the back of the grid,
mm-hmm.
and everyone just went to hell in front of me, and I somehow skirted through them, and that's when I was like, oh, that was probably one of the sketchier starts.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Mid-Ohio can be.
Mid-Ohio has got to be really gnarly. Because
they start you on the back straight.
Right. Well, because that's the only way that you'll be able to see the flag, right? If you start on the front straight, half the people are going to be in the whatever you call that section that you can't see the fucking flag stand from. That's a Mid-Ohio in a really, because I race at Mid-Ohio in a very slow car.
Yeah.
So it's manageable. But Mid-Ohio in a really fast car has to be one of the gnarlier places.
It's so cool. No, Mid-Ohio is great. Mid-Ohio is so much fun. And I admittedly, my first trip to Mid-Ohio was, you know, it was when my driver coach Joey at that point, he had his big epic incident there. And so I remember being like, wow, this is like a little cautious going there. You know, somebody you know and has that just epic.
Have you driven in the wet?
Yes.
That's fucking sketchy.
I love Mid-Ohio.
You do?
Yes.
This is how you know you're a good racing driver. If you're a really good racing driver, you like Mid-Ohio in the wet. If you're a pussy like me, you're like,
best race.
No.
My best race at Mid-Ohio was actually in the wet.
Really?
In the Grand Am car. So I was running a GT. I was leading GT at that point, but I was like midway through the DP field in a GT car.
Okay. That's amazing.
Which was awesome.
There's a bunch of
videos on YouTube about that. And
there can be like a 45-second gap between drivers like in the wet there. It's so crazy.
But I mean, I had figured out the line and I spent a lot of time driving in the wet. You know, you go up to Monterey and it's, you know, that Pebble Beach weather, like, you know, it's like 50-50 sometimes.
Yeah, but Mid-Ohio is so slippery.
Oh, yeah.
Why is it so slippery? Is it just the surface that
they haven't repaved there in like 50 years, and they keep putting down this sealant, and so there's like three dozen surface changes around. I mean, maybe probably knows better than I do, but...
There's a couple corners where it's like, you know, the car gets a little light. Like, you get this kind of this off camber, like, up and over. You're like, oh, like... You know, where that car goes up to the top, it unloads, and you're like, ooh, I'm floating. And then, you know, a couple of the corners, you go down, so you go through, you go down the back straight, you take that right, and then that up and over kind of deal, it can get a little sketchy up there. Like, you see, like, if you look at, like, a lot of the on, like the onboard videos, just you guys' hands being like,
whoa,
the whole way through there.
You end up looping it to the inside because you use too much throttle.
Yeah, because you go way out, and then you bring it back in. And then that next corner, which is that after you do that left, the next corner is that right, and there's always a massive,
it's like a river. There's a river that forms through
right
there.
At the apex. Yeah. Like right at the apex.
Yeah, I think they call that section Madness. Is that I think that's what it's called, and for a reason, it's fucking shady. In the dry, Mid Ohio is the it's called Madness. To the top right of that screen there.
There you go.
And you go up and over that China Beach is the right hander at the end of the straight, and then Madness is over a blind crest. Car gets very light, and then the right hander after that. There's a river that runs through there.
Yeah, basically, like 10 feet into the curbing on 9, there is where it just there's like usually like a massive puddle because the track kind of comes down to this, and the curbing is like Matt said about Sonoma, the curbing there is actually kind of high in that inside of the corner, but some point there is like an actual river that just kind of runs across the track, and there's no getting around it. There's no.
It's just streaming across. Right? Yeah. It's going to the inside where all the curbing is. Making
so the idea is to be straight, and then being, you know, when you hit that thing, just be pointed straight.
Ooh. But that whole section down there, that China Beach Madness, and then what's the next one called? Harry Dawes.
Harry Downs.
I'm reading from far away. That whole section has all this weird patchy sealant on it. That changes the surface right at the middle of the corner.
Yeah, I think that the plan with Mid-Ohio, I mean, and again, I know that they do a lot of work at that track. The people that run that place really do love it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So they do a good job of track upkeep. But yeah,
well, locals would prefer it this way. The locals know how to drive it, and they prefer it to be like that. You know, the people like me who come in and visit, they go, wow, this place is fucked. But the locals are like, no, it might be fucked, but it's fucked the way we like it to be fucked. And so if you don't know how to drive it right, that's not your problem. That's not our problem.
No, it's one of my more favorite tracks. I've always loved Mid-Ohio.
What are some of your other favorite tracks?
So I did Toronto in the wet, and there's always a wet day at Toronto every year. But Toronto, my first time being there was in the wet, like the Friday and Saturday, and I love that track in the dry. I hate it in the wet. It is one of the most difficult because I mean it's a street course, so it's walls. But like you go down the back straightaway into this right hand, kind of like. It's an over 90 degree, it's like a 110 degree corner. So you go into this corner that comes back on itself before it starts making this big left section. And it is the track width goes like cuts by in half.
Oh,
it goes
really?
From being like, you know, like it's 4-lane road on the back straight to being a 2-lane road. That's why you always see pileups there in the races every year.
Do you like street circuits in general?
I love them.
Like, do you like
Huge
Belle Isle?
Street fan. Belle Isle. They need to fix that course.
It's a little bumpy.
It's real bumpy. But I was running there the year that everything was being like they put down patching and they fixed track and shit
up.
Was just flying up. Yeah. Hinch like picked up I mean like a 2-foot patch of asphalt or whatever they put on there, and it just like it sent him into the barriers and he was just like, this is insane.
Didn't they stop the race? I think they stopped the race.
I think so at that point.
Or it might have happened during qualifying or something, but like they stopped whatever it was they were doing that day. It was pretty fucked up. What's like a track that you just hate? Is there a track you just can't stand driving?
I mean, you know, if I'm driving,
it's a better than sitting behind a desk, but.
I do hate the Sebring, the test course at Sebring, because it's not the full course that you test on. It's like this back little, like, this short course thing, and I can't stand that. Because it's like a mixture of, like, a couple, like, little, like, club racing tracks with, like, autocross stuff with an actual track built in there.
Yeah, half the track and then half an autocross through a
and
section.
It's awful.
Yeah, that stinks.
And it's so bad.
That. In a really fast car, you're like, what the
and
fuck
are we really
doing
here? In
a
really fast car, yeah, you're like, oh, this isn't fun.
Yeah. What about the super speedways? Are you about those?
So,
you seem like we've really focused on road course discussions more so than speedways.
I'm a big road course guy. That's where my comfort zone is. I'm fine on the oval and on, you know.
What about Indy? Because Indy's like a rectangle. It's not even really like an oval.
Indy's definitely not an oval. It is a rectangle, but it's a very different. That track is very, very different from any oval, and any driver will tell you that. Those guys will, you know, it's. The craziest thing is going down like the back straightaway and into that left-hander, and that's kind of the, you know, because this is the quickest, you know, into turn three is the quickest part of that track.
Is it so? Turn three is quicker than into turn one.
Yes.
Why? It looks the same on both sides to me. Is it not?
No, not necessarily. It's. Just kind of the way it is. Turn three is a little more open.
Huh. So this map is not to scale, you're saying?
No, I mean,
can we get a Google Earth view? And maybe that'll... I'm serious. Can we get that? Maybe that might improve?
A lot of the... So the back straightaway, too, is where you catch a lot of, like, a tailwind.
Mm-hmm.
So it's also kind of
wind
so, like,
direction.
Paul Tracy had... when they were running the Mercedes motors back in the day,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, those guys were doing... God, I think I 245 miles an hour.
I recall a 240 number somewhere. Yeah. What are you guys doing now?
Well, the current Indy cars are. I mean, they're doing like 238, 239. I think was last.
It's pretty fucking fast, dude.
So
it's pretty
fast.
But
those guys. Yeah. I mean, that is what it. You know, that's the. You'll see if they slow them down, coming up or speed them up. I mean, they always speed them up for qualifying. That's mm-hmm. the deal. But no, I mean, I'm preferential to the road courses, and you know, next year, like you know, as we near towards next year, and I'm you know going to get ready to kind of announce what my plans are, and I think a lot of people have seen the involvement of like Gas Monkey coming into racing,
yeah,
quite a bit.
How do you get along with Richard?
I get along with Richard really good. I mean, you know, Richard's
couple Miller Lights, and no, not everything's good with Richard.
Richard's is genuinely a good person, and you know his heart's in the right place, and he really does love racing, and you know he's seen how a lot of the guys, you know he knows the sport now intimately, not just from me, but through like a lot of other guys. We just did, he just did the big sponsorship with Corey LaJoie at Texas Speedway. You know, and that's a super under budget, underfunded team. And, you know, he came in there to help them, you know, get out there, run the race. And, you know, although it wasn't the most successful endeavor in the world, it's still, you know, to him, he's such a genuine fan of racing. And that's honest to God what the sport needs more of. And somebody like him coming in there and, you know, helping me out and getting involved in motorsports kind of as a whole now.
Yeah,
and expanding his brand's footprint, which is obviously, I mean, it's internationally
known. Your family has Mexican restaurants. He's got a tequila. It seems to. It's kind of isn't there
it
a gas monkey? Isn't there a Gas Monkey tequila now?
There is.
I think there is, right?
There is.
Have you tried it? Is it good?
I have cases of it.
Is it any good?
It's actually pretty. So it's a cinnamon flavored tequila.
Oh my God!
So it's. But
guaranteed
it's like,
to black out all women in the fucking room. Jesus Christ.
So
cinnamon tequila?
I can't do fire. I'm not a huge Fireball fan, but I like tequila. That, and yeah. So it's definitely...
Is it halfway between tequila and Fireball, kind
of? It is a tequila version of Fireball.
Holy shit.
So...
I'll have to try some. You want to meet up at Baja later and fucking throw some down?
Absolutely. I'll definitely send some your way, too. You can take some home. No, it makes good drinks.
Yeah.
You know, it's shocking. And I'm not just, you know, pushing product kind of deal, but it's,
that's funny.
When I first heard about it, I was like, that sounds like a gnarly hangover and, you know, among anything else. Like, you know, I remember the first time that I tried it, I was like, is this going to be like the movie, The Hangover? I'm not going to remember what I do in a couple hours.
You drink enough of it for sure. I never realized going back to that picture of Indy, there's a fucking golf course in the middle of Indy.
Yeah.
I did not. That at all. I didn't know.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So, I had no idea.
Indy, like the Indianapolis Motor Speedway is
huge.
Crazy. The road course there is awesome.
I've played it in video games. It seems fun in video games.
The road course is really cool. So they changed the... So you remember when F1 was there, they didn't have that quite that little section coming onto the straightaway. The F1 guys ran the banking. So,
yeah.
And, you know, once they had the section they had now, I think that... You know, the issues with the Formula One cars. Cause I was there the year I was, you know, spectating back then. I was there the year that they had like four cars on the grid.
Oh, I don't remember that. They had four cars on the grid.
Dude, all the Michelin tire cars pulled off.
Because they were just like, nope.
So Ralph Schumacher
had... Were the tires not good put up to that?
Ralph Schumacher had a gnarly, gnarly wreck into the wall coming onto the straightaway there. And but it was a tire malfunction. The tire blew out and just went boom. And that was, I think he was driving the Sauber, the BMWs back then. Or was it Williams? Williams BMW. But he had a gnarly, gnarly incident. And so all the cars went out for the start of the race on like the formation lap.
And just like yoink, pulled in.
And then before the lights, they pulled in. So like they did their warm-up formation lap, and then they all pulled into the pits.
And that was it?
And only four cars started the race. It was the two Ferraris and like two, I think it was the Ferraris and the two Jordans.
Wow. I don't remember that. What year was that?
What, 2005?
Really? Oh, God. I gotta go back and read about that. That's crazy. Yeah. I did not know.
Look up 2005.
Look up Ralph Schumacher's crash in Indy. This is what I want to see.
Oh.
I mean, sorry, but, you know, Ralph Schumacher has an F. It's R-A-L-F Schumacher. Ralph. I feel like this is from the cover of that book, And They Walked Away. You know, do you have that book? I have a book called And They Walked Away that's like, seriously, it's this big. It's like 3 feet or 3.5 feet wide coffee table book. Him kicking his car.
He was in a Toyota then? Ah, that was the Panasonic Toyota. There you go.
He seems displeased with his car.
But
I
think he might have had two wrecks there, like in the same place. But
I don't know. Seems like maybe
it was so bad.
Yeah,
it was so bad. I remember the video of it, and it was.
Well, there he is sliding.
Yeah, that's never good.
You're more road course. I feel you.
Yeah, I mean that's what I grew up on. That's what you grew up karting with, and you're not karting on any ovals.
How long is the race? Two hours and change. Two and a half hours.
Yeah.
How does that amount of G forces on one side of your body make you feel when you're done with that race?
Well, like you know, before like even the open wheel stuff, like in the GT cars, like I was doing multiple runs, like you know, we do in the GT stuff, you run 2.5 hours, get out, somebody goes in for another 2 hours, and then the next person, then you go back you kind of learn to like, you know, you get stamina from that. But I mean, these are all things that you train for. You know, everyone trains very, very hard in order to do that. And like for me, in anticipation of you know, next year, I've seriously upped my training in the past, you know, couple weeks. And
What is the race driver workout about? What do you do? You do the head thing with the weights?
Yeah,
you do
absolutely.
That thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a rig that has weights hanging?
Yeah,
in it?
Totally.
Really?
It looks like they like cut the center out of one of the 45-pound discs. You know, you put on the end of it. So that kind of like straps on your head, and then there's like these bungee cords that your trainer will like pull. And you know, it's for me, it's like the past couple weeks has been tough because like you're out of a car for a little while and you immediately lose that.
Yeah.
And especially in the next strength, like everything else you kind of come back up to pretty quickly. But like the best training for it outside of like the gym, but again, racing is, it's not like golf, it's not like basketball where you can kind of go pick up a ball like I'm just gonna go, you know, dick around this afternoon and shoot some hoops or whatever.
A lot more planning involved
and a lot more money involved. So like karting is used regularly.
Oh, you practice by karting?
I do quite a bit. And,
really?
Yeah,
where do you go? Cal Speedway?
I do, yeah.
Do you have your own karts?
So I run with PGR, which is Phil Giebler's team. And it's a Ricciardo kart, Daniel Ricciardo's go-kart that he has. It's actually a great kart.
He's the manufacturer of the kart?
Or they're manufactured kart, by Burrell, but they're called the Ricciardo karts.
Oh, it's like his model?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
how they drive? Is that right there, number 11?
Yeah, this is the oldest. This is
105. That's old, yeah. That's
My friend Nat Mundy, who started this go kart track in New York, GPNY, which is like the best indoor kart track ever.
Yes, I've
you know
heard
GPNY?
Of that. I've heard of it. It's unbelievable.
It's so great. And he now runs the kart track at Monticello Motor Club as well, up in New York. He is developing his own kart. With a manufacturer that's not like a shifter or anything. It's a rental cart, but it's a very high end rental cart.
Yeah.
And it's electric, but it runs AC power instead of DC power. So it doesn't slowly die over time like the you go to K1 and the cart and they fucking, this thing runs for 48 minutes and then just shuts off. Like it runs full power 48 minutes. So I'm kind of excited about that.
Yeah.
I'd love to come do some karting.
Oh man.
if there's any way I can come hang out with you guys and do a little bit of karting,
I'd love to.
I'm not terrible. I mean, I'm not an IndyCar driver, but I'm not embarrassing.
So one of my buddies just did a movie called The Art of Racing.
Oh,
in
yeah.
the Rain.
Patrick Dempsey producing.
You got it.
Yes.
My buddy Milo is the star of that, and I actually took him karting to kind of give him like the run up. So he worked with me, and then we like went through kind of the entry to racing because he wanted to understand all the levels of it.
Do you know anything about driving, really?
I mean, he's a fan. He's a car guy.
Has he been to track days or anything like that?
No, not really at all. So,
what's that guy's last name? Milo what?
Ventimiglia.
Oh, yeah.
Super good. Lives in Venice, too.
Does he? Yep. Oh, let's drink some cinnamon tequila and fucking get down.
Yeah, really, really good guy. And so he was like, I remember he got out there on the go-kart that day, and that was just like a tag 125. And he was just kind of like, oh my God, like this is physical.
Oh, karting? Yeah, dude. You do a 45-minute kart race. You can't lift your arms.
And I give him
that.
A lot of credit because he rode from our neighborhood all the way out to Cal Speed on his Harley.
Jesus.
Drove all day with
me. It's a long day.
And then drove and then rode back. And I'm just like,
a long day, brother.
I mean, that guy works out so, yeah.
When's that movie coming out? Pretty soon, right?
Oof.
They're in post now.
They're in post now. Yeah. They finished up filming up at Mosport during the, was it the
World
Challenge?
Filming during the races. Yeah. And yeah. Zwart is involved in this as well,
Zwart's
right?
involved in it, and so is Pat Long. So
yeah, like all the people that we like are involved in this. Can you hook up? Can we get Milo on the podcast, you think?
I can always ask.
Yeah. I can always talk about his experience.
I know that he's super busy right now with the show.
Make those excuses, brother. What show is he on? A show?
Yeah, he's on. What's it called? What's that called? I admittedly.
What's he? I know the name. What is he on a show? Pull up his IMDb.
Oh, why is it?
He's on a show. And then we're going to get
some
super chat.
Every girl on the planet has been watching lately. This is us. There we go.
This is us. Oh, there
you go. Yes, this is us. Everyone loves that. You know.
Oh yeah. Well, he's a good-looking man.
Yeah.
Can't blame him.
Yeah, no, good
for him.
This
is us, yeah. I've read The Art of Racing in the Rain. I bet it's going to be an awesome movie.
I think it's going to be a great
movie.
It'll
be great. And it's got the right people attached to it. So
yeah, you know, you have the star who is a car fan, like loves his cars, you know, loves being able to, you know, to drive and have fun and tinker. He likes his motorcycles and stuff too. And then you got Patrick, who has raced, has put a ton of time and money and effort and everything he's done. He's always done. When I was in Grand Am, Patrick was racing.
Yeah.
And
he's like ageless. He looks like a child,
yeah,
but he's like old as fuck.
Yeah. We're not going to be that way.
And I'm certainly not. I look way older than I really am. But he, you know, he's the man. And Zwart knows, no one knows how to film cars like Jeff Zwart. I mean, Jeff Zwart is the best at filming cars.
He's unreal. And I remember, you know, I had heard the name so many times from so many people that were in this, you know, kind of the automotive and like media center and you
he's
know, between
around.
Television. And they all know who he was. They'd all mention his name. Hey, have you ever met this guy? And like this. And when I finally met him, I was like, I have heard your name so many freaking times.
Yeah. Because as a photographer and a camera guy and a director and a producer, but also a racing driver, you know, he's got trophies from Pikes Peak.
Yeah, I didn't know, you know. How, you know, he's definitely, I mean, he's got, I respect the heck out of him. I mean, he's done a lot of really cool stuff. And
yeah, and he's the most like gentle, unassuming person ever. Like, yeah. Oh, just had nice to see you, you know.
No, he's
chill,
awesome.
Chill as fuck. All right, fools. Well, get into the super chat. We got questions from people we can answer. Zach, you want to... Oh, that picture was so great of Zwart fucking shooting fire up that hill.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's fucking great. Oh, of course it's Larry Chen. How could that picture be anyone but Larry Chen who takes that? He's the man. Larry's going to come shoot my Safari 911. Yay. Can you zoom in? I can't read
those. Thoughts on a...
Here's where we get to answer people's questions. All right, let's see. Woolsey's, can you zoom in one more? Thoughts on a Jeep J10 pickup, cool or not cool? Cool. J10s are sweet, dude. There's some fucking rad ones. Look at that. Get that gray one in the top right. That's fucking dope. They're single cabs, so they're going
to
be tiny.
And these things are actually starting to pick up value again. I keep seeing these in the Wagoneers.
Yeah. Wagoneers are gone. Wagoneers are through the roof. They are. They're super expensive for a good one.
My buddy Brad's got one, and it is so... So nice.
There's a really dope one of these on Bring a Trailer right now that has the Levi's Denim Edition one, and it's extremely cool, and someone who listens to this show should buy it. The only problem is
bring a trailer is like the coolest thing.
If you want to waste $80,000, bring a trailer is a good place to do it. Yeah. Have you bought or sold on Bring a Trailer?
No, I never have, but I keep scouring it, and like my agent Hans, who you know.
Oh yeah, Hans Schiff, of course. Automotive super agent.
Sends me stuff, and I'm like, dude, yeah, book me more jobs. Yeah. Sweet.
Buy things, then, Hans. Yeah. I like having Hans as an agent because he calls me and we don't talk about work.
He's
just like, I bought a 928. I'm like, thanks, Hans.
You get off the phone and you're like, I feel bad for his assistant sometimes because like the first 15 minutes of our conversation is like, and they listen in because in case they need something done. It's like 15 minutes of bullshitting about cars or what we're doing over the weekend or something like
and
that.
Then it's like, Ashley, are you still there?
3 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Shit, she is.
Oh, yeah, you're still there. Okay, cool. We need to get this, call this guy, let's get this going, and it's awesome.
Oh, man. J10s are really cool. Get one now before they get too expensive. They're
very
really cool
looking truck.
Hey, Abel wants to know about your Zach's M3 took a crap before last week's show.
Not fixed. Haven't really looked at it through the codes up on the forums, and I've got a bunch of theories to work through this week.
He will have an update.
I'll have an update.
Our friend Chris Harris, host of Top Gear and Driving MC Awards, had a little crash in England. I don't know if it was today or yesterday. He does a GT3 touring, and he was just driving down the road, and he came around a bend. He's in England.
Yeah.
Came around a bend, and there was a pickup truck doing a 3-point turn immediately on the other side of a blind corner, and he T-boned him. And I don't know.
Driving on the wrong side of the road?
It was the right side where he comes from, but it was the wrong side where we come from. He's fine. As far as I know,
all people involved were fine.
Everyone's fine. But I told Chris to fucking send it.
Oh, no, Subaru.
He didn't send it the way he should have. He should have drifted around the truck. What should Chris get now? He should get another GT3 Touring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It, other than, you know, crashing it, it probably worked out for him because now he gets an insurance check. He already put too many miles on that one. He was worried that he had too many miles on it because he had a year and it had like, I don't know, 10,000 miles or something on it. He drove it a fuckload. There it is. Was. It's not. The crashed pictures of it are on the Daily Mail or some bullshit.
Oof. All right.
Of course.
You should get another one because that car's rad. iHydroEye says, super stoked on the show today, listening while changing oil in my Outback, which recently had the motor rebuilt. I'm scoping out an 08 3.0 Outback for the future. Thoughts on it? Any thoughts, Ryan?
Don't they make a WRX wagon?
No. Yeah.
Well, they did. Back in 08, they did.
I would get the 08, but I mean,
you know what? Admittedly, I have a friend that has an Outback. He loves the thing, and he's like the adventurer.
Yeah.
So he's like the guy that's like, yeah, I'm taking off this weekend, and you won't hear from him until Monday morning again. You're like, oh, where'd you go? He's like, went out camping on
Where
some fire
didn't
roads.
I go? Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I think this generation of Outback, the 2008 and whatever surrounds it, is the best Outback that they ever made.
You could make it look cool.
I really do. I think this is the best one they ever made. I don't know about that 3.0. That's the six-cylinder one.
It's an H6, right?
It's an H6. I never drove that one. I drove the later H6, which I think was a 3.6 that I didn't like at all. But in general, these cars with like a little like a snow tire on them or like a little burly kind of tire and like a set of Team Dynamics wheels are fucking dope. That one is, it's super clean.
Yeah, it's good. They're good looking cars.
These are my favorite of all the Outbacks they ever made. So I say go forth and Outback. Yeah. Yes. Thank you. Turbo G says, have you met Fernando Alonso?
Yeah.
F1 versus Indy.
I mean, in terms culture, of F1 versus culture.
Culture.
I think,
culture
I think that
like?
He got a serious culture shock last year when he came to the U.S., but he, in terms
he said
of the
he
fact,
enjoyed
like,
it, didn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Said he had a good time.
Oh, yeah. I think that based on what his perception was and to come over and see what it was like, he was so blown away by that. And, you know, it's obviously that's the biggest race of the year. And so he came over and did that, and he's doing it again this year. And I think McLaren, although they're not running a full-time team this year, I think that that's definitely in the cards in the future because Zach Brown, who runs that program, is, you know, he comes from IndyCar, NASCAR, and that's why the opportunity is there. So I think that, you know, Fernando will be back more and more and more. And
Chill? Is he cool?
Yeah. He's a great guy. I spent a little bit of time with him and was very, very, cordial, and he was super nice. And as far as it comes, yeah.
Is Indy culture is not as snooty as F1, is it?
Not at all.
Not at all, right?
Not
I find
all.
It, I found it to be like halfway in between NASCAR and F1.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's you know, I think that the culture of racing in the US is you kind of couple like IMSA and IndyCar and like the World Challenge stuff that kind of like has a very similar paddock feel.
Yeah, yeah.
And then NASCAR is kind of its own culture. It's a little, it's not a little.
IndyCar is like, it's like wine in
no,
a can.
NASCAR is fucking
a
redneck.
Classy drink, but in an approachable container. Wine in a can is IndyCar.
maybe like a cocktail. We'll call it like a Jack and Coke kind of thing.
Long Beach Grand Prix. When I went down there, Graham invited me down.
Yeah.
And him and his people were super, super sweet.
Yeah. Everyone in the paddock is.
But it was not
nice.
Like I went to Monaco Grand Prix, which is the hoityest of the toity.
Yeah.
You know. And it was nothing like that.
Yeah.
It was chill, actually. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun vibe at IndyCar.
Yeah. No, I mean, they do a good job. I mean, the series has done a really good job of working with, like, again, IMSA and the other series and creating a very cool environment. Mm. And IndyCar is really pushing, you know, their drivers really hard. And that's kind of one of those things, like, you look at it. And, like, for me, I look at the business aspect of it. And you know, in the future when I'm done driving, you know, whatever I end up driving at the end of the day and you know, I still want to be involved with the sport and
yeah.
My heart, you know, I love IndyCar and I love the open wheel stuff and I see the
if you could only drive one kind of car, would it be the IndyCar?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean I still love like the sport. The endurance racing is a lot of fun.
Endurance racing is a cool
it's
like,
a really
team
good time.
Sport. You know,
yeah, it is more. It's like it's more of like the team aspect because you're driving with multiple people.
Yeah,
I mean the majority of the races throughout the season, it's two people per car.
Right.
But you know, you're looking at what the races that get all the exposure are obviously like the 12-hour, 24-hour,
which
is like
race.
Three and four driver yeah, stuff. Yeah. I've seen as many as like six at Daytona.
Yeah.
Before, and that's like when you have like a whole crew of gentlemen drivers that. Are like, hey, let's, you know.
How is it to be the one pro in a crew?
I have not experienced
no?
that one before.
We
but
can
I
ask,
know some people that have.
We can ask Bill Auberlin about that one, who I love, and he's a fucking maniac. Jay Stewart says, please elaborate why you said the Audi R8 is a boring car. Did you say that?
No.
Have you ever said
that?
That
I remember.
Who's,
I love that car.
Who said that? Did you say that on any program or anywhere, Ryan? You think the R8 is boring?
Is that on Playboy?
I may have said that at that point. So I got I probably said that years ago, but I think it was because I got a non-manual version of the R8.
Mm.
And they gave me I remember that car. It was the 10 cylinder, but it was the, you know,
paddles.
Yeah, and you know, when you're considering that's basically the same kind of base as like Gallardo, and I've spent a ton of time in Gallardos, and then you kind of get in that and it's just like
a little bigger, a little softer.
Yeah, it's just it's a lot softer and the sound isn't there, which, you know, I don't need that, you know, that ear piercing sound all the time, but yeah, I mean it was a very different driving experience considering the platform is relatively the same
yeah.
thing.
I never said the R8 is boring. I don't know who he was referring to. Maybe you, but
maybe.
I think if you're Ryan's size, you're definitely a Lamborghini guy. And if you're my size, the extra room of the Audi is much welcome. So, all right. Jord Dizzle says, hey, Matt, love the show. Live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I have a 2017 GT350. Any mods you do to it after the warranty expires for spirited back road driving? Well, 17 means Magna Ride. So you don't have to fuck with the suspension much. You may want to go with a set of Ford Racing springs. You may that.
How
I mean,
stiff is that car stock? I've never even been in one.
It's
actually.
Not that stiff.
Okay,
it's not like, bad, but it's actually a really cool car.
It's a great car.
It's a great car.
But the, like the R, you know, with the magnetic ride and the really lightweight wheels. I mean, I would say get a set of Carbon Revolution wheels, but they're like fucking $15,000, so it's not really practical. I mean, it doesn't need much as long as you have magnetic ride.
Put springs over
just
it.
Just a Ford Racing springs. Not too mm-hmm. low, just a standard Ford Racing springs for that car. That's really it. It doesn't, it doesn't need more power for sure.
That S3 I drove had the mag ride, but
yeah.
it put springs on it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah,
it was
a nice.
Really nice combination.
Yeah, it's good. That's all I would do, honestly. I don't think that car needs much of anything. I think they're lovely to drive. If you had a 15 base, you know, with the without mag ride, then I would say like Konies or Bilstein shocks and springs, because they were, those were a little loosey goosey. But if you've got mag ride, just the springs. Yeah. Braden says, I have a 2014 Audi S4 with bolt-ons. It's good, but I don't find it fast or engaging enough. I'm in Canada, but I have a winter car already. Fun, fast, and road trip tolerable. Should I get an Audi RS3, a BMW M2, a Camaro 1LE, or a base GT350? Well, any recommendations there, Ryan?
Can they get the hatchback RS3 in Canada?
I think so.
100% there. Yeah.
The RS3s are rowdy.
It's
they're
awesome.
Fucking bitching.
That is one of the coolest cars.
Yeah.
I think. Like, even the previous generation ones.
Yeah.
Were so rad, and they didn't bring them here. And
no.
It was just,
the 5-cylinder's really cool.
It's very cool.
It's super strong. You can make a zillion horsepower with like 5 parts on one of those things. Do you see the one, the APR's got one that runs 9s?
I've heard it's crazy.
Yeah, they've got one that run. They put drag radials, they took out the interior, and it's got like 5 parts on it, and it runs 9s.
Ooh,
yeah.
Not for Canada.
Not for Canada.
No.
Oh,
all
no.
Right.
The RS3 sedan is still...
Is a
an
cool
incredibly
car.
Well-rounded
still, yeah,
car.
It's a
very
cool
fast.
Sedan is good.
The hatchback is just so cool, though.
Yeah, the hatchback would have been better for road trip too.
Then, I mean, I guess my I'd probably say the M2 after that.
The M2 I like because it's the right size.
Yeah.
It's got great visibility.
It's really
cool. Very comfortable.
Seats fold down. I put a bunch of camera cases in it as well. It's way nicer to drive. I think the interior is way nicer than the Camaro, even though I think the Beamer interior is a little boring right now. They're just like black, but I think the 1LE will look tired in a few years.
Yeah. And base GT350 are nice, but not, again, I wouldn't get the base one. If it's a brand new one and you can get magnetic ride, that's a much, the newer one is the improved. I wouldn't get a 2015 base. That's where I stand.
How many people do you need to take on a road trip too? Because the RS3 you can hold 4 more comfortably than the M2 or the others.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean the other 3 cars there, the back seat is not useful.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know, there's
I just love hatchbacks.
Me too.
I'm a huge hatchback fan.
I'm a big fan.
And you know, it's like the two coolest, like Mercedes wins for having like the coolest hatchback or
GLA.
Yeah, I mean it's like even because like, they made a kind of like ridiculous AMG version.
Yeah,
and
that
it's
engine is
cool.
Pretty rowdy.
And but it's again with Audi. I mean, didn't you know? Are they going to bring the RS6 wagon in this country or no?
Probably not.
See,
because it wouldn't sell.
It's such a bummer.
Yeah.
Have you seen what the CTS-V wagons are going for?
They're like expensive. The manuals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Only
like
the manuals.
$50,000.
Yeah, the manuals
for
are,
a used
yeah.
car with 50,000 miles, which is like mind-boggling, but it's a great car.
The wagons are pretty rare, and manual wagons are very, very rare. There aren't a lot of those to choose from.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and the people that bought them new, a lot of them are just keeping them.
The only thing that I don't like about hatchbacks now is that if I'm putting something valuable in the back, I have to cover it. Like, I like having a trunk that I can lock
They have the covers.
They do, but it's like, you know, if my laptop's in there, someone could smash the window and get it, whereas if it's in the trunk, they can't.
Could you Euro delivery an RS3 hatchback?
Totally.
And bring it in?
To the U.S.?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Because it's basically, it's the same as the, like, in terms
you can
of
Euro
crash
delivery
testing.
Any, well, wait.
Yeah,
they sell the Euro, do they sell the hatchback here? They do, right?
No.
Oh. Then no.
No sedan.
Okay.
No, you can't. Then if they don't sell it here, you can buy any U.S. spec car, Euro delivery, and then, but not if they don't get it.
Unless
you can't
it's a
get
959 and you've gone through all the legislation.
Unless you show and display that shit.
You're Bill Gates, you can bring
in
whatever you want.
Yeah. Philip says, do you think toge-style track battles will become more popular in the future? Like the Grid Life Speed Ring thing?
Does he mean like a hill climb but with two cars at once? Or I'm kind of confused too.
I'm not sure what a toge style, like in Best
Tokyo
Motoring.
Drift.
Right. That's what I'm thinking is like mountain road, but with multiple cars, but probably not because passing would be very difficult.
Or maybe it was supposed to be tongue style street.
No,
you know,
that's
track battles where guys are just yelling at each other.
Just Google the,
plenty of that.
The Grid Life Speed Ring, which is a bracket racing head to head time attack style battle. And I don't. We can't get a video of it, but Google. Go to images and let's see. Let's see. The speed ring they did. They made it like a head to head thing. So it was like A versus B, wheel to wheel, and then they sort of round robined it elimination style, rather than just having cars lapping and then the best lap time wins.
Interesting.
Which I should probably talk about, well, maybe next show. Fucking, I went to Global Time Attack at Buttonwillow, which was interesting to watch.
So this is a head-to-head. This is on Speed Hunters, not Speed Ventures. This
pull
is
that over so they can see
Grid Life.
Yeah, so it's a head-to-head battle, but sort of halfway between Time Attack and wheel-to-wheel racing, which is
okay,
pretty cool.
So
I think that's what this is. I think they said it. I saw Chris Stewart from Grid Life. He said it was reasonably successful.
So they start them tandem or side by side?
Side by side.
So they start them almost like FD, and they roll out and go, or they start at standing start?
It's standing start, two cars,
and one lap.
And they do, I don't know, it's like a three-lap race or something.
Oh, that's a cool idea.
That's actually kind of
cool. And the winner moves on, which I think is pretty cool.
I think that's a pretty cool
idea. And
then
at the end, they do like a five-car battle.
I like that better. Whoa. I like that better than the drag racing set of things, because this is, in my opinion, there's like more skill involved in the fact that you're on a track and you're going, you know, from left to right. This is very cool.
And like, I just watched Time Attack, and like, Global Time Attack is a well-run event. It was, the cars are pretty cool, you know, seeing what people build is crazy, but like, ultimately, Time Attack is a kind of a boring spectator sport.
Yeah.
You're really watching a track day, you know, and like, all right, guys are going fast, and like, some guys are really some dudes running. A guy in a fucking Evo ran a 38 at Buttonwillow. A 138.
Wow.
That's
Big Willow?
No, at Buttonwillow.
Oh, Buttonwillow.
Really, really fast. The big story from this Time Attack was that there was a Tesla Model 3 performance that ran, and I talked to these guys. They were very nice guys. And they ran a 200.7 in a Model 3 performance with modified suspension. Pretty good.
Wow.
Pretty good. And with their new, like, track mode or whatever, they could run, like, 7 laps. It was 6% battery life per lap. But then they had a 50-amp RV charger. So they could charge it, like, part of the way. They could run two 7-lap sessions in the morning. And then they'd have to drive to the supercharger 10 miles away at lunch, get back up to full charge, and then they could run 2 sessions in the afternoon. So, all right.
Yeah,
all
4 right. sessions, 28
Not
laps.
Not bad. All and right. they ran a 200.7. They got on the podium, but then they got protested for not using a spec fuel. Seriously, someone protested them for not, from the podium.
Seriously.
Yeah, for not using a spec fuel.
Well, actually, to be fair, they were using spec electricity because PG&E supplies electricity.
I don't understand.
California.
Yeah, no.
Everyone has the same electricity.
Which I think, which actually is the next person's question, but it was about this. So I think that's fucking dumb.
Yeah.
And I you know, okay, if the rule says the rule should be changed to accommodate for
I guess
this.
Things like this always have to happen where someone does a new technology, the rule book doesn't fit it, and either they get labeled as cheaters and then they change the rule book but they don't take the win away,
right?
Or they have to change the rule book, but that for someone to protest that, it's just like you got beat
in
your
gay. It's a G-H-E-Y gay.
It's really lame.
But here's the funny part about it, right? So they ran a 200.78, and that was they were on the podium with that. It had coilover suspension, modified control arms, lightweight wheels, and upgraded tires, right? Homie went out after them in a fucking straight up rental Camaro, run flats.
Awesome.
No prep, no tire pressures. My race car broke, so I rented this so I didn't lose my entry money, and beat them by 3/4 of a second. So all
awesome.
This people, yeah, it's the fastest, yeah, like, homie smoked you in a rental car. Shut the fuck up.
Well, the Camaro is an excellent car.
It's an excellent car.
And I, you know what? I really hope that
on
that rented Camaro.
On Goodyear run flats, dude. No prep.
I hope that Camaro also beat whoever submitted the protest for spec fuel. I hope the Camaro beat them too.
The Buttonwillow, though, dudes, these guys push hard, you know, and Buttonwillow, it's not a lot of places to actually have a crash. You know, there's a lot of dirt, not much wall. And people were fucking sailing cars off the track.
All the time.
Sailing. You should turn around and just like.
But
huge
there's those
dust
little
cloud.
Rocks out there that are like, I would say about an inch around, and you just annihilate floor pans.
Yeah.
I mean, like, real bad.
We were there years ago, and a guy had flipped his brand new M3 because
caught
he went
edge.
Off and caught an edge in the dirt.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of cars that were snow plowing with their splitters and stuff, but it was people were pushing, man. Someone, what's your name? pride in performance. I detail high-end cars in the north of England. If I come to the UK, get in touch. Thank you. Don't ever, if you come, because if I come, I'm going to have shit to do. But thanks. Honestly, when would I ever just be there? No, you're never just there.
No,
if I'm just somewhere, I'm in Venice, bro. I'm never just somewhere.
Just at home. That's
I get
nice
on a plane
too.
For a reason. John says, I'm replacing my supercharged E92 M3 competition for more of a daily driver for winters and bad roads on Long Island. New Audi S4 or RS3?
He's
budget
six
is 60K, 6'3", 265. I say get the RS3 because the RS3 is much more fun to drive than the S4. Still has a usable back seat. You know?
Not behind him, but that doesn't matter. He can just put the seat back, and then whoever sits behind on the right is fine.
Yeah. I say RS3, although Long Island has some fucked up roads. Yeah. So you may want to, you're not going to like this, but you may want to look at a SQ5.
Yeah. Just, now, I kind of dig the SQ5.
SQ5s are fast.
It's pretty cool. and all you got to do is get the APR tune on it.
Yeah. And isn't like, APR tune like 80 horsepower on one of those things?
I don't
it's
know.
A bunch,
I've never been an Audi guy other than like I've gotten to drive a couple times. Like the RS4, the manual all-wheel drive is like one of my favorite
so
cars
good.
Of all time. There's one, again, on Bring a Trailer right now. I think there's a blue one on
the RS4?
Yeah, and it's rad. It's such
they're
a good car.
They're so great, but you do not want to deal with the maintenance bills of one of those.
No, not at all.
They're a nightmare.
It's six. The Audis are usually more accommodating too for taller guys. This is not me.
I think the RS3 is. I haven't driven an RS3 yet. I've driven the S3 and I've driven the TTRS. So I've experienced those things, but not at the same time. I found the S3 very roomy. I thought it was great.
Yeah,
it has a lot of.
Yeah, but this dude's coming from a supercharged.
It's coming from a supercharged E92 M3, but also like if those E92 M3s, I love them,
awesome.
But I really feel like you sit up on top of them and not down in them. The seating position's really high.
Yeah, true. I always ran my car like I was pretty low in the seating.
I like low. How tall are you?
5'9".
Yeah, a little shorter. He's 6'3". He's gonna feel like he's fucking smashing the ceiling that thing. Nick says, "What is the trickiest corner to get right in a road or mild track car at Thunder Hill and at Sonoma?"
Wow.
Sonoma's got to be turn one, right? Trickiest corner at Sonoma?
I would say the following. So there's a couple different configurations at Sonoma. Turn one is tough, but it's really not in terms of like super difficult because as long as once you get the bearings of like where the brake point is and primarily your brake release point so that you're not over slowing the car going into that second corner, that little right hander up
there.
The
right hander over the crest.
I would say the trickier one is got to be the little S's because you make a slight right and then you make the left that goes down into the first apex. That's like a left-hander. And then you come back up the hill. So you go down. It's a lot like turn six. That first section of it is like turn six at Laguna Seca, where it's like a little sketchy on the end, but not as so sketchy. But you go in there at full load, and you got to carry. Like you overshoot. You feel like you're going to overshoot the corner. You have to carry so much speed going into it. And then you catch. The car catches on that uphill side of it. And then you basically aim it, and you're back on throttle. And then you go over the crest because it goes at the apex of the car.
It gets real light up at the top there.
It does like one of these.
Yeah.
It's like a full on, and it's noticeable. So I'd say that was probably the trickiest corner for me to learn. Just
for me at Thunder Hill, it's that blind. There's a blind crest that I never ever trust. The other side is there. I don't know I don't remember what corner it is.
Yeah.
But there's a blind crest. I went over it 100 times, and every time I was like, there's nothing there.
You got to do it.
They moved
years
the football.
Years ago at Laguna Seca, the Skip Barber guys, and I learned about this. So when you go up to the corkscrew, right, because the biggest thing is like you can't see anything, especially an open wheel car. You know, and when I first was like learning the track out there and how to drive out there, it was a Skip Barber car.
So an old little Skippy Formula car?
Yeah. And you come around, and you're just like, oh, like shit, I'm turning, but like I don't know where the track is going to be in a second, so I don't know where I should come. Like the first times I turned too much, a couple times I did the Alex and Artie and went off like into the apex a little. Yeah. But those dudes were so smart by taking a cone, and there's a tree that is right on the outside. So when you turn, and that cone is still nailed to that tree to this day, which is so rad coming down. But that's like that's the reference point. So you come in, you make that left hander, and you're like, oh, cool. There's the cone straight. full throttle down the hill.
Yeah, that helps.
So that's, I mean, that's like, that's
like Road Atlanta's got a tree as well. When you come over three, like you aim for a tree there. Yeah.
But the thing is, like, but that stuff you're supposed to figure out in track walks. Or you do what they did, which is you make your own kind of accommodation. Yeah. Hopefully nobody does anything about it.
Dude, track walks were the first track walk I ever did was the most helpful thing ever. Like little nuances of camber and elevation I didn't notice until I walked it.
You notice a lot more about the track itself once you walk it.
Yeah. It was super helpful.
And like even on weekends when, you know, I've been spectating, not racing, I still will participate in track walks, you know, with one of my old teams or what, you know, somebody, people that I know kind of thing, just for the knowledge.
You know what's fun too, if you have the opportunity, is a track bicycle. Bicycling a track is really fun.
No, it's good. Yeah, it's
you can get some of the same elevation nuance.
There's always like in the racing pack, there's like you get on the golf cart, drive, stop at the corner, walk around, get back on.
But like when I did like one lap of America, people would bring their bicycles and ride laps around the track because you weren't allowed to scout it
How
in a car.
That? I heard that was
so fun. Yeah. It's so fun and it's so hard because it's just exhausting. And if you're not like if you're the fastest guy, like you get to leave first. And so you can get to your hotel and like get to sleep. But if you're in a slower car and you have to wait till later in the day to leave, like you might leave the racetrack at 4 p.m. and have to drive 600 miles and like exhausted. Alex says auto FRS is a daily in Tampa traffic with an Evo 8 weekend car. Sure. You ever drive an automatic FRS?
No.
It's totally decent. You not expect it to be. You go, FRS got to be manual.
So I've never driven the FRS. I've driven I drove a BRZ.
Same thing.
And I know it's the same thing. Yeah, it was exactly a manual, but now it was like kind of cool. Is it the same motor? Is that same boxer?
Same everything. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Same everything.
The BRZ is like 10% softer springs, but that's it.
It's fundamentally the same exact thing. The automatic gearbox is shockingly good.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I've driven one on a track, I've been impressed by it. Yeah, totally decent.
I like the way they look. They're kind of cool.
Yeah, they're just slow, but they're fine. But yeah, sure. The auto is fine, and you should not be, as a car guy, don't be embarrassed. They are responsive. It's fun to drive. It's cool. Yeah. Nate, get a Road Trek supercharger, though, because it needs it. Nathan says, with a big donation. Thank you, sir. Finally caught up to another live podcast. Thank you for the content, et cetera, et cetera. I will keep up the hustle, sir. No worries. Thank you. Space Tug says, any tracks that are great in an Indy car but sketchy in a street car?
Again, I mean, it's any race car versus a street car. It's a matter of how your car's set up. That's just going to be like any track can be sketchy in anything, or it can be kind of whatever. That's kind of
interesting. We're talking about like crests. Like, are there cars like Indy has so much downforce where crests are easier than in a street car where it gets light.
Yeah, but I mean, even in essence, if a car is getting light, even in a street car, it's going to be the same thing for the most part. With a car with higher downforce, just not going to be as exaggerated.
Okay.
Because the track surfaces and elevation, things like that, are always still going to be the same no matter what you're driving.
Right.
Yeah, but certain things will be exaggerated in a street car. The track that, because I really don't have a lot of time in street cars at like all these different tracks. Like where we always do like when we did Playboy Garage, like everyone around here uses the same tracks.
Yeah, yeah.
Use like Thermal's like the only new one.
Yeah.
Thermal, I think, can be a little sketchy. In a street car, just because
walls are very close
and the dust tends to blow there, so like every morning that track is real green. Like, it's a good way to put it.
Let's see, Blake says, what are your thoughts on the BMW 650 Grand Coupe?
I had a press car for a week and
a 650.
Did you
like it?
I liked it. I mean, it's not an M6 Grand Coupe.
That's what I'm saying.
So it's more accessible cost wise. It's, you know,
I mean, it's better looking than the 5 Series.
It drives better than the 5 Series.
I disagree with that, but that's okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I hate the front of these, and I hate the Grand Coupe back. Yeah,
I think they look better than the 5 Series.
Yeah,
but
I'm kind of with Matt on this one.
I don't know. I think these the non M's. Are like, especially because the M's are so watered down now, like they're fast, but they're watered down.
Yeah.
The non-M's are really watered down.
They're just numb.
Yeah.
Is the problem. Like all the new M cars,
mm-hmm.
like the M4, I think was my biggest disappointment. I got in that and
it's huge.
It's huge, but like I drove, like Mercedes still kept all of the fun of the C63. Like it's still,
they're raw.
it's raw.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's I definitely understand why people wreck the shit out of them. Yeah. But like the M4 was just like, it's quick and it handles well, but my biggest thing with BMW and that I want to strangle whoever made that decision was when they went to the electric steering situation. I hate that. Because that was the thing. The E92 was, I think, probably one of the best iterations of the M cars. Mm-hmm. Between the E46, and they did make solid improvements, you know, going into that E9 generation. But all the new M cars are numb.
I like the M2. That's my choice of all BMWs right now is the M2. Yeah. But I agree with you fundamentally. The regular models are super, super watered down.
I might get some, get some hate on this, but I have a ton of time in one, which is a part of the reason I like it. Johnny O'Connell drives one every day, but the ATS-V, although it looks a little dated, like it's still kind of cool looking. But
great steering,
dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that car is awesome. I drove that back and forth to Scottsdale like 3 times,
yeah,
and then found every road. Like, there's a bunch of cool roads up by Joshua Tree.
Oh, fuck yeah. No, the one where you ditch off by Palm Springs and you go up by Idlewild?
Yes.
Yeah, that's the 74.
Yes.
That's the tits, dude. And that road rules.
I ruled that road in the ATS-V, and I had so much fun in that car. And I think that when the price comes down on those, like, as they get older, they're going to be, yeah, exactly.
I don't love the engine in those, but the chassis and the steering are amazing.
Oh, spot on. Yeah, yeah. And even the brakes were great.
That road that goes up the mountain by Palm Springs and around, I took a Macan Turbo S and I mobbed the shit out of it, dude. That car's like a luxury rally car. You can drive it really, really aggressively. It's very fun.
I drove, so when we filmed Playboy Garage, our camera car was a Macan Turbo.
Yeah. They're great, aren't they?
It was fantastic. And then everyone keeps telling me, I haven't driven one yet, so if Porsche people are listening and want to give me one to drive for a little bit, I want to try that Macan GTS.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I mean,
if you talk to the Porsche engineer guys, their favorite iteration of every Porsche that's out is the GTS.
Yeah, yeah. It's the enthusiast choice. But I mean, if you've driven the Turbo a bunch, it's subtle changes. It's not a wildly different product. Like my good friend has an S with a Cobb tune and exhaust on it, and then I drove the Turbo S, and around town, and when you're not driving them hard, they were 95% identical.
Yeah.
And when you started to really push it hard was when the Turbo S made a big difference.
Okay.
But like same thing with the GTS, like it's in between, but if you've got seat time in the Turbo, it'll be largely similar. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chanceficaton says, I have $8,000. I'm looking for a fun sedan. Looking at a 2010 Passat with DSG? Nope. Or a Legacy GT? Yes. I live in North Carolina. Any suggestions? $8,000, I don't want to tell you, I hate to say this, is not very much money. The Legacy is a Subaru.
Yeah.
05 to 08 Legacy GT.
What is DSG?
Dual clutch. The Volkswagen dual, but 2010 dual clutch. That's not what you want right now.
You also just don't want something that complicated for $8,000, right?
I rode in a diesel Passat like wagon situation.
Yeah.
With a manual.
Yeah.
But it had an epic tune on it.
Yeah.
And it hauled balls. That thing was so quick.
You know what I actually might recommend is a quote fixed Jetta TDI wagon. Like one of the newer ones because they took them back. They bought them back. They fixed them.
True.
I know someone who bought one after it was fixed and said it was 95% the same as before.
Mm-hmm.
And
but cheaper.
Cheaper because nobody wanted them.
Yeah, that's a good call. Check that out. And if you get a Subaru, just make sure it's had like the 100,000-mile head gasket thing that happens. My brother bought an Outback for like $6,000, but then he had to do a head gasket after that. And that costs, I think, like $1,500 to $2,000.
Yeah.
But if you do that to those, like, then they just keep going.
But the Legacy GT, Ryan, of that generation has the STI motor in it and 6-speed.
Cool.
So
that STI motor is super cool.
It's fairly stout. Yeah.
High school friend of mine had a WRX with that STI, and I was like, this thing's pretty rad. We took it to Bear Valley, Northern California, and wintertime, like in the snow, and I was like, oh.
They're great.
Now it kind of makes sense.
But 8,000 is like, damn, man, you're worried about reliability at that point. Because I assume he doesn't have an extra 8,000 on top of that for fucking parts. So.
No, and you're going to be looking at a car with 120 plus thousand.
Yeah, or maybe scope, like, honestly, like an Accord V6 manual. You know what I mean?
That's a really fun car, and it's just going to work.
Yeah, Accord V6 manual, or, you know, That's kind of where I would go. Something Japanese and simple.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't overthink that. Is that the end of our questions?
That is.
Right on time, because I don't want to push the barriers of live streaming. We had a little snafu at the two-hour mark last time, but we're doing all right. What do you want to plug, Ryan, while you're here?
I mean, you know, I'm happy to be here. Not too much to plug. And I think we talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
which was cool. And
if you're interested in Royal Enfield motorcycles, you can follow Ryan on Instagram.
Follow me. We'll have updates coming out. You know, in the coming months. You know, on the delivery of, you know, the new 650 twins coming into the country because they're not here yet. That was last year.
That's fucking awesome.
Super Nationals, go kart race. So
where was that?
Vegas. So Vegas awesome. Super Nationals are coming up. That's this coming weekend. It's the biggest go karting race in the world.
Are you racing it?
I'm not racing in that one.
Because we're gonna be in Phoenix.
We're gonna be in Scottsdale. Phoenix that night. But I've got some stuff that I'm actually doing Thursday and Friday, which are the primary practice and then race like heat race days. So I just couldn't do it this year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds fun. Well, follow Ryan on Instagram. It's Ryan, PHINNY.
Yes, sir.
For those on the audio stream. And, yeah, good luck fucking doing your fucking racing and shit and selling motorcycles and building motorcycles. And we'll go drink some cinnamon tequila.
I like that idea.
Dude, if you're in Monterey or if you're in Venice Beach, Baja Cantina. I ate lunch there yesterday. Seriously. I did. I ate lunch there yesterday, and I ate way too many of those fucking chips. They're really good.
Oh, see, I avoided
homemade
it for that
chips.
Reason.
I know it's really a problem.
It's ironic when you think about it. Like, you know, growing up with that, and I'm not, you know, 500 pounds.
You could be.
I just don't eat there that often. That's the thing.
And the rosemary chicken. Good. The rosemary chicken burrito is so on point. That's
so
what
luckily. I mean, the perks of being at the family restaurant. Luckily, they know me, and so I got to tell them, hey, you know, I need the diet version of this stuff. Yeah. So not as exciting, but the food's always good.
Dude, Baja Cantina is a good Mexican restaurant in a sea of good Mexican restaurants in this city.
Car
it's excellent.
People. Yep.
Car people.
I saw
someone rolled in on a 6-4 yesterday while I was having lunch. It was nice. It's great. I get to walk there. I don't have to drive, but it's good. Ryan Finney on the Smoking Tire Podcast. We are powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally, something to say. We got Sammy Smith on the next show. Sam Smith, Road and Track, one of my favorite writers. He's coming to town. We're doing a little story together with a Civic Type R and an Integra Type R. For the live folks, that will be Thursday the 15th at I believe 4 or 5 p.m. That'll be a fun show. Thank you all. See you later. Goodbye.